was Mama Monster. That's how stupid. I can't help it.
This. I'm gonna keep the recording until you say it. So.
Okay, wait a minute. I gotta compose.
You've gotta get through it, or we're never gonna be able to do this.
I have to compose myself. Wait a minute. Okay.
Jesus.
Okay. Hey, this is Mama Monster, and you're listening to the Solo Monster Sounds Off.
A special Mother's Day message.
Every time I think about my mother, it sends a certain feeling up and down my body. My mother got that big, thick strap and whipped our behind. Whipped our behind. Thank you, mother, 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 like no other. Every time that I cried, and my mother didn't know why. How can I tell my mother that I love her, that I love her, that I love her? I wanted my mother to know that I love her every day, not just on Mother's Day, but I love my mother on President's Day, on Election Day, on Labor Day, Independence Day, Columbus Day, Earth Day, Memorial Day, Flag Day, Groundhog's Day, April Fool's Day, New Year's Day, St. Patrick's Day, and yes, even on Father's Day, I love my mother. My mother, your mother, all mothers. My mother, your mother, all mothers.
It's business time, baby.
The Solo Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. This is episode 495 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, May 14th, 2017. I am the Solo Monster. You can probably guess what my surprise is that I teased at the end of last week's show. For the first time in almost 10 years of doing this show, my own mother will be doing a guest spot later on here in celebration of Mother's Day. We're going to talk about wrestling. Among other things, I actually have some trivia questions that I have whipped up as well. She does not know this yet, but she will soon. I'm going to test her old school wrestling knowledge. So that should be fun. We'll get to that later. Also, I want to say thank you for everyone's kind thoughts on my own test last Monday. One of the more unpleasant experiences that I've ever had. And yes, you are awake for the entire thing, but they got what they needed. I'll get the results in about 10 days or so. So I just wanted to say thank you to all of you. Also, you guys keep doing your thing with Audible. You guys have been killing it. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster here now in the month of May. We are extending our offer to all of you to sign up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service so you can get one free audio book as part of your trial. That could be the new AJ Lee book. It could be the new Justin Roberts book, which I don't believe is up yet, but is expected to go up on Audible any day now, or any of the myriad of other wrestling books that are up there. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Just go through the sign-up process. You have 30 days to try out the service. If you don't like it, you can cancel before then without being billed, but you get to keep your one free audiobook no matter what on us. So go ahead and do that, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. They've been a fine sponsor of this podcast, and I'd like for you guys to show them some love. I also want to show some love to all of our PayPal VIP. Shout out to all of you guys. $10 or more will get your wrestling nickname and a shout out here on the podcast. But you can make a donation of any size at any time on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. That is the most direct way to support this podcast. I want to say thank you here as we do roll call to some of the usual suspects and a lot of new ones this week too. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, love the Lunatic, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, the Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra. We have Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa, Rolex Robin Party, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Prince of Pleasantville, Anelio Crockett, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker, Real Rock and Roller, Ryan Hodge, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, Capital Carnage, Christian Reyes, we've got Michael Maximum Payne Palkowski, the Asian Sensation, Justin Lowe, Empress Jessica Green, Road Warrior Reagan Wedge Jr., the Chin Crusher Karsten Axe, the Belmont Sentinel Luis Alejandro, the infamous Luis from our Facebook group, who says here that he read on Facebook that one of his high school teachers was savagely murdered. Wow, Jesus Christ, about a week and a half ago. And he wants everybody listening to know that you should tell your teachers that you care a lot about them. That is a good message. My God, Luis, this is terrible. This just brought the vibe of the show down tenfold here. But no, I'm very sorry to hear that. And yes, you should always tell your teachers. And hey, this is a Mother's Day show. Tell your moms. Tell anybody who's important to you how much they mean to you, because you never know when you may not have a chance to do so. So I'm very sorry to hear that. Joseph Fratboy Burrow and Alberta College Chick Pellegrino getting a shout out here this week. Braulio Lobo Cabrera celebrating his 1 month anniversary today to his wife Jennifer. Congrats to the both of them. I know they're listening right now. May you have many more together. Also want to say thank you to Board Vegas. Thank you so much for the support. Andre Ghirbolini and Kaz Illustration. So there you go. We had a lot of first-time donators this week, which is awesome. I love seeing that. So again, thesolemonster.com is the place to go for that. Unfortunately, we have a lot of injury news that we have to start off with this week with WWE. We've got Braun Strowman, we've got Emma, and we've got Ember Moon injury updates. Now, we'll start with Braun, because that's literally and figuratively the biggest of all. Ryan Satin of ProWrestlingSheet.com, I believe, was first to break all the details. Braun Strowman will be, if he has not already done so, be undergoing minor elbow surgery for an undisclosed injury that's going to keep him out of action anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. And that puts his rumored Universal title match against Brock Lesnar in doubt for the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view in July. I can't say it without doing it that way. There's a good chance he would have headlined the Extreme Rules pay-per-view too, because, you know, him and Roman Reigns, they've got, you know, they're basically one win apiece. So you would think they would have done the rubber match, some kind of stip, at Extreme Rules. And I guess Braun would have won. He would have gone on to get a championship match now. That will not happen. That's out the window. It's not the torn rotator cuff that they're talking about on TV. That's a phony injury. I guess to cover for the real injury, which is not quite as extensive. I don't know. But, you know, for a guy with a supposedly torn rotator cuff, there he was on Raw last Monday, right? Cleared for a match against Kalisto. So, yeah, that's not the real deal right there. Roman Reigns did come out. He attacked Strowman's arm in the angle they did on Monday night. I assume that's going to explain his absence now from television. This could not come at a worse time for WWE. This could not come at a worse time for Braun Strowman. He is getting a huge push, the biggest push of his very short career. He's, again, probably in line for a shot at the championship, even though I didn't expect him to win it. And really, he's been one of the only reasons of late to even watch Raw. I'm sorry, but he has been. Raw is Braun, right? I've been posting that graphic in the Facebook group when I put the thread up. He has been one of the very few reasons to watch Raw. Before him, it was probably Chris Jericho. And then Jericho, you know, went away and got drafted over to SmackDown. Now Braun is you know, one of the things I think most people look forward to. And now, whether they try to keep him on TV while he's hurt or not, that I don't know. But he'll probably be gone now from TV for a while. The one silver lining in this, you always got to try to look for a silver lining. I look at this and I say to myself, if he does have to miss that July pay-per-view, because that's going to be cutting it awfully close if he's supposed to be out, let's say, 6 weeks or 8 weeks. It's not just having him wrestle. You've got to have him on TV for at least a couple of weeks to, you know, to promote a match. So if he is out of the July pay-per-view, they can do what I predicted way back in January when I did the annual Sound Off prediction show, which is Brock Lesnar against Braun Strowman for the championship, I guess it would be in this case, at SummerSlam. I wanted that match at SummerSlam. I predicted that it would happen at SummerSlam, and now it has a chance of happening at SummerSlam. So, to me, that works out great. Maybe not so much for WWE, but here we are now in a situation where we could very well end up getting that match at SummerSlam, and I think that's a good thing. Question is, who does Lesnar defend against in July? Because that pay-per-view in July is supposed to be his first championship defense since winning it at WrestleMania. They want to save Roman Reigns, obviously, for WrestleMania next year, so I would assume it's not going to be him. Once Seth Rollins is done with Samoa Joe, they could transition Joe maybe into something with Roman to keep Roman busy. And I could see them doing a three-way in July with Lesnar, Rollins, and Balor. That could, you know, and coming out of that, assuming, you know, Lesnar retains, they could then set up a singles match for SummerSlam, a rematch from last year's show between Seth and Balor, so you can have them go off and do something together. And, you know, and then what do you do? I guess the question then becomes, if you have Rollins and Balor then doing something in August, and then Brock, let's say, faces Braun for the championship in August, what do you then do with Bray Wyatt on that July pay-per-view, right? He and Balor obviously are headed for a match in June, one would think, at Extreme Rules. If they keep that thing going, so let's map this out here. Okay, let's assume for a moment that this Bray Wyatt-Finn Balor feud is going to go beyond just one pay-per-view match, okay? Let's say they're going to go in June, they're going to go again in July. If they do that, then I guess they could just do Rollins against Lesnar at the pay-per-view in July. They could do the second Wyatt-Balor match on that show. And they could do Joe against Reigns. So those could be your top three matches for the pay-per-view in July. Me, personally, I kind of like the idea, honestly, of doing a three-way better with Balor, Rollins, and Lesnar. I just think back to the three-way Lesnar had with Rollins and Cena at the Rumble a couple of years ago, how great that match was. So I think that match could actually be a lot of fun. Jay from the UK wrote into the show this week. He pitched the idea of a Roman Reigns-John Cena match at SummerSlam. And this was, by the way, this was days before WWE put up a video on their own YouTube channel talking about Roman Reigns and John Cena as some kind of a dream match. I know that's become the talk over the last few days. Jay sent me this email long before that even came up, so that's kind of eerie. But he pitched the idea of doing Cena and Reigns at SummerSlam. And you know, when I see WWE say, well, dream match, you know, John Cena and Roman Reigns, I hate how casually people throw that term around these days. There are very few actual dream matches anymore. And if there are, it probably involves a WWE guy against someone who isn't even under contract to WWE. So the likelihood of it happening is slim to none. Cena and Reigns, I guess maybe to some younger fans, it might be a dream match. You know, I guess to some of the kids, that could be like their version of Hogan Warrior, as sad as that sounds. Obviously, to me, I mean, Cena-Reigns is not a dream match. It is still a big match, though. There's no doubt about that. That's a big match. I could see that for SummerSlam. You know, if they want Roman Reigns in a big match, but not a championship match, if they're looking for an attraction, then maybe you do one big interbrand match at SummerSlam, and you have Roman Reigns face John Cena, which frees up Randy Orton then to defend the WWE title against AJ Styles, and Brock Lesnar could defend the Universal title against Braun Strowman. And you can also do Rollins and Balor as a singles match on the undercard. So there you go. Right there, look at that. All of a sudden, you've got four strong matches on top, and SummerSlam all of a sudden feels like a really big deal. I like it. I like it. When I think about it like that, I like it. Now, we just need to come up with a story for how we get to Cena and Reigns. I saw John Cena has already sort of called him out in a newspaper interview this past week. He was talking about Roman going around saying that WWE is his yard after he beat The Undertaker. And John Cena said, I've made a career of shutting the mouths of people who love to go around talking about how WWE is their yard. So the trash talking has already started. They could very easily have Reigns just go on TV and respond. Drop little comments here and there. He could even challenge at some point John Cena to come on by. Come on down to Raw. Say that to my face. And just like that, we're off to the races. Reigns and Lesnar is locked in for WrestleMania already. So to all the people saying, well, why would you blow off a Roman Reigns-John Cena match at SummerSlam? That's a WrestleMania-caliber match. Yeah, I guess it could be at WrestleMania 35 or something, but who the hell wants to wait that long, right? And who's to say you can't do it at WrestleMania 35 anyway? That, you know, Reigns is already occupied for next year, so I say do it at SummerSlam and get yourself four big matches out of it. Now, moving over to the injury to Emma. Unfortunately, Emma's string of bad luck continues. She was out for a year. Actually, it might have been more than a year. She was out with that back injury, and then they kept talking about Emma Lena is coming, and she's coming, and then she never came. She only recently came back to TV. Now it looks like she may be out again. She was injured in a tag team match in Liverpool last weekend. WWE's been on this brutal European tour. I mean, if you look at the schedule, it's brutal. I mean, I feel for those guys. I'm sure, you know, some of them love the travel and all that, but I can never do a schedule like that. So she was in a tag team match over in Liverpool, and it was Emma and Alexa Bliss against Sasha Banks and Mickie James. Sasha gave Emma the double knees in the corner. Emma landed very badly on her shoulder. And the match, I've read different reports that say the match was immediately stopped. I read another report that said that I think Sasha went for the pin. Emma didn't kick out. It was just kind of a cluster. Whatever happened, clearly it was a legitimate injury, a serious injury. They sent her home from the tour to go get tests done. I have not seen any formal updates from Emma or from WWE on exactly what the injury is, how serious it may be, but Emma posted a very cryptic kind of a message on her Instagram page a few days ago. So if you kind of read between the lines, it seems like she may have gotten some bad news. What that means in terms of how long she may be out for, I don't know, but it sounds like it could be a while before we see Emma again, and that just, it sucks. It really does. It sucks for her. I feel really bad for her. This stuff happens, you know. Again, I didn't see exactly how it happened. I just read that it was Sasha with the double knees. It could have been, you know, Emma just putting her arm out and landing wrong. I don't want to assign blame to anybody. It's just a very crappy situation, and hopefully we'll get some kind of an update this week, and maybe if she's only out for a month or 2 months, that's not terrible, but if she tore something or she's going to be out for 4 months or 6 months, then that's absolutely terrible. And it's one less woman now on that Raw women's division, on that roster that they have to work with. Now, speaking of women, we have Ember Moon. I've talked about this. Ember Moon had suffered an injury in the Battle Royal on NXT a few weeks ago. She landed very awkwardly. Also, another awkward landing. Asuka basically lawn darted her through the ropes out of the ring. She landed badly. She hit the guardrail. So her injury, at least what they're saying publicly, it is a grade 1 shoulder sprain. And grade 1 doesn't sound too serious, but it's serious enough to keep her out of the Fatal 4-Way at TakeOver next weekend. And by the way, we are going to do predictions for TakeOver a little later on, so you'll want to stick around for that. So she is officially out of the Fatal 4-Way match against Asuka, Nikki Cross, and Ruby Riott at TakeOver. It will now be a triple threat with the other women. Ember is out. And so there you go. Those are your injury updates. They're the walking wounded right now in WWE. They can ill afford any other injuries. I would wrap the whole roster in bubble wrap if I could, but you can't really do that. GQ Magazine did a huge spread. They did this huge profile on The Rock this past week with the headline, Dwayne Johnson for President. This made headlines this week. This became a big story. Is The Rock going to run for president? You know, is he serious about it? Could he win? Everyone talking about The Rock. And again, the article, it makes the case for why, in the writer's opinion, The Rock could very well be not only run, but be elected president of the United States. They asked him if he could see himself giving up his entire life, all the movies, all the money, the wrestling, everything, to become president. And he said it's a very real possibility. Now, people say things all the time. I remember Hulk Hogan formally announcing that he was running for president on The Tonight Show, and then he never did. It was a publicity stunt. So who's to say how serious he is or isn't about this? I've thought for a while now, just watching him and all the things he's doing with his career, all the moves he's making, that he was setting himself up for higher office at some point down the road. So this doesn't really surprise me at all. He has crafted, I have to say, you know, especially as a PR person, he has crafted this immaculate public image for himself. I think he and his whole PR team over there, whoever he's got working for him, deserves all the credit in the world. They've crafted this image of this guy where everybody likes him. Who doesn't like The Rock, right? I mean, you talk to people, whether they're wrestling fans or not, obviously there are people who don't like The Rock. But, you know, you talk to most people and they have nothing but glowing things to say about this guy, how nice he is, how funny he is, how entertaining he is, how how selfless he seems with how he gives of his time and all of these different things. And you can hardly find anybody to say a bad word about the guy except maybe Vin Diesel. So if he's serious about this, right? Now let's consider the fact that he is serious and he is giving very serious thought to this and he would like to run and he thinks he could win, whether it's in 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, whatever, right? If he's serious about this, me personally, I would rather he run for something like governor of a state first, show people how he leads a state before trying to run an entire country, okay? Like, even senators, they've held public office, right? They had a record to go on before they ever even tried to run for president. Rock has none of that. He has a public image. He's been in the public eye for a very long time. He's a celebrity. Everybody knows who he is. But he's got none of that. And I hate this idea that just anybody now thinks they could just walk in on day one and be president. Like it's just another job. It's not some freaking reality show. And I know that after everything that happened last year, you could take all the old rules, you could take all the conventional wisdom, you can just throw it right out the window, right? I get that. It feels these days like up is down and left is right, but just because you're a nice guy and everybody likes you doesn't mean you're going to make a good president. Now, I do think The Rock is a genuine guy. I really don't think it's just some public put on, like, you know, he's this nice guy who cares about people when he's in front of the cameras, but then behind the scenes, he really doesn't give a crap. I believe that's who he is. I think he's a genuine, mostly a genuine guy, but let him run for governor first. That's what I say. Florida, which I think is where he lives now, California, honestly, I think would be the better choice. California is a huge state. We're not talking about some tiny state with some small population. California is a huge state. It has the sixth largest economy in the world. The world! California's economy is larger than the economy of all but five countries. Okay, so if he could run a state like that successfully, if he could do a good job, you know what? I would feel a hell of a lot better about him running for president. And if he does a good job and I like a lot of his policies, I would consider voting for him. I mean, he claims to be an independent, so I'm not sure where he stands on most issues. All the more reason, in my opinion, then for him to run for smaller office first. And then if he runs for president, if he actually makes it that far, and I think he could, I think he's got a real good shot at winning because part of what got Trump elected was his charisma, right? Charisma was a big part of it. You can say whatever you want to say about the guy. He's got charisma. He's got the experience of being a TV star. And he knew how to connect with a certain segment of the population. The Rock is the most charismatic guy that I've ever seen in my life. He's got the gift of gab, all those promos, cutting those promos all those years. Just imagine him on the debate stage, right? I was going to say, like, I don't know that calling his opponent a popcorn fart would really do him much good, but Trump called people names all the time, and he won. Okay, so who the hell am I to say that Rock wouldn't be able to say stuff like that? Rock knows how to work a room. He knows how to work an audience. Do I think he could win? Absolutely. But get some experience first. My real question is, why would he want to? Why would you even want to subject yourself to the scrutiny, to the campaigning, to the just the dirty politics, and then all the BS and all the nonsense if you actually win once you get in? Why in the world would someone like Rock even want to do this? This guy has the best life in the world right now. He is the highest paid star in Hollywood. He is in his prime earning years right now. He's cranking out movies like, I don't even know how this guy has any free time. He's got that baller show on HBO that's in like its third or fourth season now. He can drop in and wrestle a match anytime he feels like he wants to. Whenever he gets the itch to do that, he's got the freedom to do that. The guy's got it made. I look at Trump sometimes and he looks depressed. He looks bored. He's probably thinking to himself like, what the hell have I done here? Right? Like my life was great just the way it was. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, it would be nice. In theory, it would be nice to have more people like Rock in politics. If he is as sincere as he says he is and seems to be about wanting to help people, I think that's a very noble quality to have. I think that's a quality, frankly, that's missing on every level. So, giving up that life that he has now just to go into politics, especially in that position, right? And of all the political positions to run for that one, to give all of that up for that, that would not be my idea of fun. But you know what? If he wants to use his celebrity to try to do good, then more power to him. But do it the right way. Run for governor first. Then you can worry about being president. As WWE television goes, NXT aside, because I liked NXT this week, you know, I gotta say, this was one of the most boring weeks of television that I have seen in a very long time. I honestly feel like if I would have missed both of these shows, if I would have missed Raw and SmackDown completely, didn't even after the fact go on YouTube and watch clips or highlights or anything, if I just completely missed both of these shows, and then I picked back up with it this week, I feel like I would not have missed a thing. It would almost be like it didn't happen. Total filler. And that's a problem. Now, Raw was live to tape, not live exactly, live to tape from the O2 Arena in London this past Monday. They were in the UK, actually, for both shows. These were not the loud, kind of boisterous, energetic UK crowds of the past that you usually see when WWE is over there. If they were and they were muted, I apologize, but that's not how it came across on TV. Raw Twitter poll, over 2,000 of you voted. 24% thumbs up, 76% thumbs down. But here's the more shocking number. 1.89 rating for this show, which was good for 2.6 million viewers. That doesn't mean they had 1.89 million. That's not how the ratings work. But a 1.89 rating is not good. My question is, how low can it go? How low can it go? Now, they were still good enough for second place for the entire night on all of cable. And I fully expect them to bounce back tomorrow night. The number, I will tell you right now, that number is going to go up tomorrow night, I guarantee it. What they should be worried about isn't so much of the week-to-week numbers anymore, right? It's the lows that keep getting lower. That is the real problem. And you can make up all the excuses in the world that you want. It was the basketball game. The show is taped, and so people didn't want to watch. People watch on YouTube. It's cord cutting. It was a full moon outside. People were still hungover from Cinco de Mayo, and they forgot the show was on. You can go through your whole laundry list of excuses if you want to. At the end of the day, you cannot excuse your way out of a bad show. And if the show is more compelling, people would watch. I'm not expecting the numbers to be what they were 10, 15, 20 years ago, because yes, cord cutting and all of this stuff is really happening. But the dramatic drop when you look at these numbers, and I keep going back to the fact that the lows keep getting lower. So Raw could go from a 3.0 rating one week to a 2.6 and then bounce back and have a 3.2. Let's say Brock Lesnar is back and they promote a big match or a big angle and they shoot back up. That's going to continue to happen, okay? The numbers are going to continue to seesaw up and down. Pay attention to the lows. Because every time you hear that Raw did a record low, or it's the lowest Raw rating in 20 years, or the lowest Raw rating of all time, every time it happens, the number gets lower. So 6 months ago, that lowest Raw rating of all time, let's say whatever number it was, well now, the next time they hit their low, it's going to be even lower. And the lows keep getting lower, and to me, that is really the issue that they should be concerned about. But, you know, again, people are watching these shows on some weeks. They're tuning in for the opening hour, let's say, and then you can pinpoint it an hour two or hour three where they just drop in droves. They just turn the show off. And again, that is not a good thing. Now, to be fair, they had to rewrite the show kind of at the last minute because of the injury to Braun Strowman. I guess once they found out he was hurt, they had plans for the show and they had to change all of those plans. And so that may have played a role in how uneventful the show was, but I honestly think even if Braun was completely healthy, I don't think even that would have been enough to make this a thumbs-up show. They got problems. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, they have problems. This show is not as compelling as it used to be. I can't even say it's the talent. You look at the roster, there's no reason this show should be boring any week. Okay, some weeks are going to be better than others. You can't hit a home run every week. Sometimes you hit a base hit or a double. But with the roster that they have, with the talent that they have, there is no excuse for this show. There's no excuse to have shows like they had this week. There's no excuse for people to vote 24% thumbs up, 76% thumbs down. There's no reason for that. There's no excuse. And you have to take responsibility for that yourselves. You have to look, I think, at your own creative and just look at what you're doing and say, what can we be doing better? What are we doing that's chasing people off in hour two or hour three? What are we doing that the lows keep getting lower? You know, you can't just blame everybody else. You've got to take responsibility for that and try to figure out, what can we be doing differently? Is it the way we're presenting the show? Is it the length of the show? Is it the overly scripted promos? Are people not buying it? Are we just missing that one big hot star? Is that what it is? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. You can point maybe to all of those things. But they've got to get their house in order here, because I could watch Raw one week and be like, okay, you know, that was a pretty good show. And then they'll follow it up with 3 weeks of garbage. 3 hours worth of garbage. That's what makes it even worse. It's bad enough to fill 2 hours. To fill 3 hours, that's what it feels like they're doing sometimes. They're just filling time. And I'm not going to sit here for 3 hours and just watch them fill time. I'm going to do other things. I'm going to kind of half pay attention to it. And more and more, that's what people are doing. And it ain't good. It ain't good. I don't really know what else there is to say about it, but they've got to address that. Now, they have bumped up the Intercontinental title match between Miz and Dean Ambrose to tomorrow night. Maybe that's one way to do it, right? Put a championship match in the main event. They're not waiting for Extreme Rules. My guess is that Miz is going to win the title this week, and then they can do a rematch with him and Ambrose at Extreme Rules, some kind of stipulation match, and Miz will probably win that as well. Hopefully Miz does win. He should be the champion. I've already made my thoughts clear in the last week or two on Miz and how I think really that is the best role for him. I'd put the Intercontinental title on him and just keep it on him for a long time. Whether that's Mania next year or whatever, let him have a nice heel run with the championship. Kurt Angle did not make the trip to the UK, so they did a deal where they made Dean Ambrose the acting general manager for the night. Not a very bright move by Kurt, making a guy with the word lunatic in his nickname an authority figure for the night. I would question Kurt's judgment in that. Miz came out, he said that Stephanie McMahon had somehow gotten wind of Angle's plans, and so as a safeguard, she took the liberty of making Miz the co-GM for the night. Braun Strowman came out, his arm was in a sling, came out and said that he was going to finish off Roman Reigns once his arm heals up, which got cheers from the crowd. Then he said he's going after Brock Lesnar, which got maybe the biggest pop of anything on this entire show. Even more so than the UK guys like Jack Gallagher when they came out. I was kind of stunned, actually, when Gallagher came out. He didn't really hardly get much of a reaction at all. He got cheers, but nothing like what I would have expected. But Strowman just announcing that got a bigger reaction than basically anything else here on the show. Kalisto came out to the sounds of silence. He's got new music. I think they ought to replace his new music with the sounds of silence. Just have Kalisto at this point come out to Simon and Garfunkel, because I think it would be a more appropriate theme for him. He was very angry with the way that Braun Strowman treated him like garbage. He demanded a rematch against Braun. Of course he does. Why wouldn't he? I mean, he sees the guy's got one arm. All of a sudden, he grows a spine. So Ambrose made the match. He also made Miz against Finn Balor, which opened the show. Balor won. Maurice distracted the referee. Miz shoved Balor into the referee. He said, oh, that's a DQ. You got to DQ him. And sure enough, the referee called for the DQ. Ambrose said, no, we're not going to have that. He restarted the match. Balor hit a sling blade, drop kick in the corner, double foot stomp, and got the pin. Miz later on in the show told Ambrose that he would be facing Bray Wyatt in the main event. Alexa Bliss has a new bodyguard. Her name is Nia Jax. They have formed a temporary alliance in exchange for Nia eventually getting a championship match. She was in Alexa's corner for her match with Mickie James. Alexa won. How did Alexa win? Oh, that's a hell of a finish. She punched Mickie in the face. Mickie fell off the ropes. And she pinned her. That's a pretty lame finish. Even with one arm, Braun Strowman was still murdering Kalisto in their match when the Big Dog's music hit. Showered by boos. This man was hated This man is hated cross continents here. Roman Reigns comes out, although I have to say, Roman was one of the few people who actually got a reaction on this show, so thumbs up for him. He knocked down Strowman with 3 Superman punches, rammed Braun's shoulder into the post. He hit him with the chair a couple of times. Braun retreated through the crowd in pain, holding his arm. This was pretty good. This may have been the best thing on the whole show. Some nice intensity there from Roman Reigns. Pissed off Roman Reigns. We had Sheamus and Cesaro winning a tag team turmoil match to become number one contenders for the tag team titles. They beat Enzo and Big Cass first. I'm convinced at this point that Enzo and Cass, it's like a rib on these guys. They're never going to win titles at all. Tag team titles together. I think that Cass will turn on Enzo long before they ever win a championship. I'm stunned. I mean, I look back, I was stunned when they didn't win the belt in NXT. Then they got called up to the main roster and they were super over. And I said, okay, well, they'll win the tag team titles here. And it's been over a year, which in WWE time is like 5 years. I mean, that's a long time. And they still haven't won the titles. And not only that, they're losing here in the opening round of this tag team turmoil match. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, it's not going to happen. If it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. It's probably going to be a deal where Cass does turn on Enzo and they split up before they ever have a chance to win the belts at this point. So, they got beat. Enzo tapped out to the sharpshooter from Cesaro. Out came Heath Slater and Rhino. They were out next. Sheamus pinned Slater after a brogue kick. I don't even think Rhino ever tagged into the match. They had thrown him into the ring steps at the beginning, and I think that's pretty much where he stayed for the duration. Anderson and Gallows were out next. Sheamus pinned Gallows after a brogue kick. Came down to the Golden Truth. They really wanted you to think that these guys had a shot because Sheamus and Cesaro were so tired from all of the previous matches. They're exhausted. Goldust and R-Truth might actually become number one contenders. I think you'd have to be a little delirious to have actually thought that. But then again, I shouldn't say that because Breezango are the number one contenders on SmackDown. So we're kind of in like the pigs flying mode right now in WWE. I think between that and Jinder Mahal getting a WWE championship match, we are officially in pigs flying mode here in WWE these days. So they're tired, they're exhausted. Goldust and Truth, they're going at it. They're trying to become number one contenders. After all of those decisive finishes, pinfall, submission finishes, and all the falls leading up to this, it comes down to a roll-up with Cesaro holding the trunks and pinning R-Truth. Goldust ate a brogue kick when the match was over. Not so broken Matt and Jeff Hardy came out to make the save, and Sheamus and Cesaro bailed. We had Seth Rollins beating Samoa Joe by DQ. They had a long match. Probably went about 15 minutes or so. Not a lot of heat. You know, I gotta rant a little bit about this too. I'm glad that Joe is involved in a semi-high-profile feud right now. They could be doing nothing with the guy. I would say feuding with Seth Rollins is far from nothing, so that's good. And I've liked Joe's intensity on promos and all that. You guys know I'm a Samoa Joe fan, so I say this trying to be as objective and fair as I can be as a fan of his work. I'm trying to think back to the last great match that he's had, and I'm coming up blank. It's been a while. I might have to go back to the Balor feud, maybe in NXT. I know they had a few matches, and I remember those matches being pretty good. But I don't really think he's had one yet on the main roster. I know it's only been about 3 or 4 months, but he has yet to have what I would consider to be a really great match here on the main roster. Even his feud with Nakamura in NXT. If you guys listen to all the times I reviewed those matches and those takeover shows, I was not blown away by any of their matches. I just wasn't. I didn't think those matches were all that good. And I'm still waiting. Now, it's not that Joe's not going out there having good matches. They're solid. But it's nothing like, oh my god, you have to see this match kind of stuff. I've honestly felt that way with Rollins also recently. But it struck me with Joe. Because I'm a fan of his. And I was just thinking as I was watching this match. And I was kind of bored. I was like, man, you know, when was the last great Samoa Joe match here in WWE or NXT that I've seen? And I'm like struggling to come up with what that match would be. So anyway, what they did here is the turnbuckle pad had come off during the match. Joe whipped Rollins into the exposed steel. He took a bump off of it. Referee tried to put the pad back on, but Joe grabbed it out of his hand. He threw it into the crowd. Referee said, don't do it, don't do it, but he did it anyway. He grabbed Rollins, he threw him headfirst into the buckle, and got himself disqualified. He put Rollins in the choke. He told him, it's over when I say it's over. These guys need to just have a street fight or a false count anywhere match at Extreme Rules. I think this needs to end there, and they have to move on. Sasha Banks pinned Alicia Fox with the double knees in the corner. The replay showed Fox's shoulder came up, and they showed it like three or four times, so I assume that means we're getting a rematch tomorrow night. Main event was Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt in a non-title match. Miz and Maryse were on commentary. Shout out to Ed from, is it Guildford or Guildford, UK? I think Guildford. He emailed me to tell me that during the match, I guess he was there, there were people throwing balloons around in his section, and there were chants of balloon mania. You may have heard security popping some balloons, he said, you know, during the match. I don't remember that because by that point in the show, I was completely checked out. I was just ready for the show to be over. So I don't remember any of the balloon stuff. And maybe his section was way up and we just couldn't see it or hear it. But he said he found it very distracting. So there's one person who wasn't a fan of some of the antics of the UK crowd. Miz and Maryse walked down to the ring to get a closer look. He grabbed the Intercontinental title. He started posing with it. Ambrose did a tope out of the ring onto Miz. And when he went to go turn his attention back to Bray Wyatt, Miz hit him from behind with the belt. Wyatt got a near fall out of it, but then immediately followed up with Sister Abigail, got the 1-2-3. And so Miz was the last man standing as they went off the air. A boring show. Speaking of boring, SmackDown Live, SmackDown Not So Live from London, England. 1,400 votes in the poll. SmackDown's been lagging behind Raw in terms of these poll, not so much the poll results, they've been winning, but in terms of the number of votes, like the interest doesn't seem to be there the way it was a month or two ago. It was kind of keeping pace with the total number of Raw votes, and now Raw usually beats it by like 600 votes, 1,000 votes. So we had 1,400 here, 63% thumbs up, 37% thumbs down. I respectfully disagree. This was not a 63% thumbs up show. We must have been watching two different shows. Before I go on, congrats to Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella on the birth of their daughter, Birdie. Birdie Jo Danielson, Tuesday night, 8 pounds, 10 ounces. That's a big baby. They should call her Big Bird. I will show myself out. Why do parents do that to their kids? Why do they do it? You know, I've always said to to friends and stuff, I've said if I ever had a kid and it was a boy, I haven't really thought about if it was a girl or something else, but if it was a boy, it would probably be Austin or Cameron. I just like those. I've always liked those names. I don't know why. I just do. But I think they're relatively normal names, right? Austin and Cameron. I mean, they're not really all that unique. I think they're relatively normal. And I see like Gwyneth Paltrow like named her kid Apple. You know, it's like I don't know how she came to that decision. Maybe she just really likes apples. But that'd be like me naming my daughter Strawberry because I really like strawberries. Can you imagine that? Strawberry Solomon. Like the ass kickings that kid would endure. But I guess it helps that Birdie's dad is a wrestler. So I think she'll be okay. I am still not buying the Jinder Mahal stuff. It's been in several weeks now. I'm happy that he's getting an opportunity. I'm actually really happy for the Bollywood boys. They went from nothing to being featured in this main event feud. It kind of, you know what they kind of remind me of? They kind of remind me of the Edgeheads. When Edge was the top dog on SmackDown and he had Ryder and he had Hawkins. Now, they had been around for a while. They were probably like a jobber team. They really weren't doing much. All of a sudden, these guys are hanging out with the world champion. They're interfering in main events. And that's kind of how they built the profile for themselves. And you know, Zack Ryder went on to a certain degree of fame and has been employed ever since with WWE. I think he actually did pretty well for himself. And these guys are kind of like the Edgeheads in this scenario here. They came out of nowhere. They weren't doing anything. They were doing cruiserweight stuff. All of a sudden, they're featured on the main roster. you know, in main events, interfering in main event matches and stuff like that. And it's a chance for them to establish an identity and a profile for themselves. And when this runs its course, who knows? Maybe they'll just end up as a tag team in the tag division on SmackDown. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just be jettisoned back to the Cruiserweight division or back to NXT. So, you know, for their sake, it's a chance for them to just take full advantage and hopefully things will work out for them. But, you know, that aside, all the warm, fuzzy feelings for these guys aside, I ain't buying it. And now we're a week away. We're a week away now. Remember when I was talking about this a month ago, I said they've got 4 weeks. Let's get that great promo from Jinder, or let's see Jinder in like a big match or something. Do something, say something to convince me that, yeah, you know what? I can buy into this as a championship main event. And now here we are. We are 7 days away, and I am exactly in the same position I was in a month ago. So he interrupted Orton's promo at the start of the show with the Singh brothers backing him up. Sounded like he was losing his voice. I'm going to take the title back to my people, and I'm going to wear it to the Taj Mahal. And I guess we're all supposed to hate India now because that's Wrestling 101. He's the evil foreigner, and so let's hate India and all Indian people or whatever. I don't know. Kevin Owens came out. He said nobody cares about India or Jinder Mahal. People cheered, so there you go. He said nobody cared about England either, and then he got massive heat. I thought that was awesome. He said Chris Jericho couldn't even last 2 hours on SmackDown, and at Backlash he's going to end AJ Styles' career. That brought out AJ. Fresh off his suspension, out came Baron Corbin, or I should say wedding. That's why he was suspended. Baron Corbin now is a married man, so congrats to him. Although he was attacked from behind by Sami Zayn, and this all led to a 6-man tag being made for the main event. Orton, Styles, and Zayn against Jinder, Owens, and Corbin. Natalya pinned Becky Lynch, just as lame as the finish that we saw to Alexa and Mickey on Raw, and very similar too. Natalya just yanked her off the ropes. Becky was on the second rope. She grabbed her leg, she yanked her. Becky hit the mat, and she got pinned. I don't know why you would redo the same shit finish 2 nights in a row, but there it is. The baby faces were out there, Charlotte and Naomi, they were out there to sort of counter the welcoming committee. But there was a little bit of a tussle between Naomi and Charlotte that led to some dissension in the back afterwards. Charlotte blamed Naomi for Becky's losing of the match. And even though Naomi got involved only after Tamina was interfering. So Becky finally comes in. She's like, look, we all have to work together. And they all agreed to do so. I am not convinced that this supposed Charlotte babyface turn is what it appears to be. She's still acting very much like a heel. Frankly, I don't think she should turn. I think Charlotte is a natural heel, just like her father. I think babyface Charlotte is going to flop. I think babyface Charlotte is going to flare flop. So I hope it's all just a ruse. And she turns on them at the pay-per-view when they have their match, and she stays exactly where she was before, because I think that is Charlotte at her best. Lana is still coming to SmackDown. We got a London edition of the Fashion Files with the Fashion Police, Tyler Breeze and Fandango. They came across a crime scene in the hallway backstage. There was paint splattered all over the place. They followed a trail of paint to a door, but the door was locked, and you can hear inside there was a lot of grunting going on. Now, I don't know. If that's me, and I see a locked door, and I hear a lot of grunting coming from inside, I'm going to keep walking. But that's just me. But I guess these guys are supposed to be police, so they have to investigate. So they get the door open, and when they open it, they find the Ascension in this tiny, like, utility closet, grunting at each other and, I guess, psyching each other up. What the Ascension was doing in a locked room, grunting at each other, I would rather not know. Eric Rowan pinned Luke Harper after he thumbed him in the eye and dropped him with a spinning slam, is that what you would call it? This was boring. Whatever momentum Luke Harper had a few months ago, it is completely gone. Like before, I would say it was like 80% gone. It is 100% gone now. So, way to go. Dolph Ziggler came out. He cut a boring promo. Are you sensing a pattern here? I'm using this word a lot. Dolph Ziggler came out. He said, I work hard. I'm not appreciated. Basically, the story of his career condensed into 5 minutes here. He called out Nakamura. Nakamura made his big elaborate entrance. Very, very popular here in the UK. He did some talking as well. Not too much, but he did speak. He took his jacket off. He was ready to fight Dolph right there and now, but Dolph turned him down. And then he ended up attacking Nakamura anyway. Nakamura fired back with knees. He kicked Ziggler out of the ring, and that's how this thing ended. Dolph is, I will say this about Dolph. Dolph is the perfect first opponent, I think. I think Miz would have been too. But then they drafted him, and it looked like that was maybe what they were going to do, and then Miz got drafted over to Raw. But I think Dolph is the perfect first opponent for him. But I cannot think of very many people on this show I care less about right now than Dolph Ziggler. I think Dolph would do well to leave when his contract is up and do what Cody is doing. I mean, look, Dolph may not even want to wrestle when his contract is up. Maybe he wants to go do movies or stand-up comedy. Fine. But if he wants to continue wrestling, I think the best course of action for this guy might be to just leave and go do what Cody is doing, Cody Rhodes. Go hook up with Bullet Club. I think Dolph would fit in with those guys just very well. And I think it would maybe be the best thing he could do to try to get some of the juice back that he's been missing for a long time, to try to become semi-relevant again. Bullet Club is still a big thing to a lot of people. Bullet Club was in the news this week. I'm going to talk about that when I talk about Ring of Honor later. That might be the best path, I think, for Dolph. Because I look at this guy now, I think of what might have been, I think of where he was and all the stuff he's been through, and I just don't care. I just don't care. The Fashion Police did beat the Ascension. After the match, the Usos came out. They congratulated them on actually winning some matches. And they said, with 12 days until Backlash, they said, they ran down all the things that Breezango can do in 12 days. They could get beat down in 12 days, get knocked down, get stomped out, on and on and on this went. This was actually damn good, I have to say. The Usos are just killing it on the mic. The Usos, one of the, what's the word I'm looking for? One of the, I don't know, revelation is the right word. Usos have been around for so long, but I think some of their promo work since they've turned heel is stuff that I didn't know they had in them. So props to them. I've enjoyed that aspect of their heel work. We had a backstage segment with Mojo Rawley giving a tour to four random kids. And he then told them a story about Andre the Giant. Not about how he went undefeated for 15 years, which is a lie. Not about his match with Hulk Hogan he said at WrestleMania 3. I'm going to tell you about Andre as a kid and how Andre was ostracized and bullied by the other kids, but he didn't let that stop him. Oh, no, 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 no. He used that as motivation. And he murdered those kids with his bare hands, and then he drank a gallon of wine immediately after. Now, that's the story he should have told them. He left out that last part. But he pulled the tarp or whatever off the Andre Memorial Trophy. He showed them the trophy, and the kids were like, wow, look at this. And one of the kids asked, well, can I touch it? And by the way, the idea that, you know, you have Mojo Rawley in a backstage segment with a bunch of little kids, and the little kid is like, can I touch it? That's kind of creepy. So he's like, well, can I touch it? And Mojo says, sure, just don't break it. And as the kid goes to touch it, Mojo kind of spooked him, and he started laughing. So the kid then kicks him in the shin. And Mojo took a bump, and I think he should have kicked him in the dick is what I think. That would have been hilarious. He kicks Mojo in the dick. Mojo crumbles into the fetal position. All four kids start just kicking the crap out of him, and they push over the trophy as punishment for telling them such a bullshit story. Then we find out that Zack Ryder put them up to it because he's been jealous of all the attention that Mojo's been getting in his absence. And boom, there it is. You've got the setup for a Zack-Mojo feud. See how easy that was? I just came up with that just on the spot. That would have been more entertaining than this segment. We got a video of Rusev telling us that he hasn't heard from Shane McMahon or Daniel Bryan since demanding a championship match at Money in the Bank, and so he's going to show up to SmackDown next week. So he's on his way back. We had Orton, Styles, and Zayn against Jinder, Owens, and Corbin in the main event. This went about 20 minutes or so. Long match. Sammy was bleeding from the nose. I think Owens may have tagged him. I couldn't tell. So Orton was setting up for the RKO on Jinder when the Singh brothers jumped up on the apron to distract Randy. Jinder caught Orton turning around with a big boot right in the mush. Sammy then caught Jinder with the Blue Thunder Bomb. Corbin slid in. He hit Sammy with a choke slam across the knee. Styles hit Corbin with the Pele kick. Owens knocked Styles out of the ring. Orton spun Owens around, hit him with an RKO. And finally, Jinder hit Orton with the Cobra Clutch Slam, which is a really weak finish, by the way. But it was effective because he pinned him. Jinder Mahal pinned Randy Orton here on, I guess it wasn't the go-home show, but here we are now with a week to go until Backlash, and he pinned the WWE Champion. I look forward to Randy Orton reversing that into an RKO at Backlash, as I'm sure he will. This was a good match. I enjoyed this. This was good. But it's going to take a hell of a contract signing segment on Tuesday, if they have one, to get me to care about this match. I still say that Kevin Owens and AJ Styles should headline the show. But I could, you know what I could see them doing? I could see them wanting to end with Orton winning and then having Rusev attack him. Let's see what they do with Rusev on TV this week, because I think he may play a role at Backlash. He may interfere. Maybe he'll interfere. Maybe they'll do a shit finish. They don't want to beat Jinder. They want to keep Jinder looking strong, but they don't want to put the belt on him. You know, they could go a few different ways with this, but perhaps that's what they have in mind. That's maybe the only reason why Orton and Jinder might actually headline the show, is because they want to have Rusev do some sort of run-in and maybe leave Orton laying, and that sets up their match at Money in the Bank. I guess we'll see what happens. But we got one more SmackDown left, and boy, like I said, contract signing or not, they better do something to get me interested in that championship match, because right now, I'm not buying it.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
This was the show to determine who would meet Bobby Roode for the NXT Championship at TakeOver Chicago. I'm going to get to my TakeOver predictions right after this review, but first, the show opened with Aleister Black making short work of a very tall Brazilian by the name of Cesar Bonani. For that 60 seconds that Bonani was on offense, he did hit a very impressive drop kick for a guy of his size. But then Aleister spin-kicked him right in the face. Black mask, the guy collapsed right on his face. I thought he sold it like he was out cold. Maybe he was. And Aleister Black got the pin. That is a great finisher, I have to say. You know, for as awful as the Cobra Clutch Slam is that Jinder Mahal's been using, Black mask is an awesome finish. You know, and it, maybe his, like, long legs, the way, you know, when he spins around, it just looks more impressive when he does it than it would if a smaller guy did it. I don't know. But the sound it makes, the impact, the way the other guy sells it, it's just really good. They showed the Ember Moon injury from last week, and then they interviewed her as she was coming out of the trainer's room with her arm in a sling. She admitted that she is out of the Women's Championship match at TakeOver, but she intends to come back stronger than ever. We got a Ruby Riott video package. We got a lot of video packages on this show, but they were really good, so I was okay with that. The Ruby Riott one, she talked about the significance of all of her tattoos and how each one tells a different story. They showed some highlights of her wrestling on the indies. That's back from her Heidi Loveless days. She vowed to win the NXT Women's Championship at TakeOver. And then came a bizarre interview, if you want to call it that, with Nikki Cross. They tried to get her to put a microphone on, to pin the microphone to her shirt. She snapped at the producer and chased him away. Then she became infatuated with the boom mic that was hanging overhead. She kept smacking it. I'd still rather interview Nikki Cross than the Headbangers. Drew McIntyre was interviewed backstage. He said that he was disappointed not to be included in tonight's number one contenders match with Hideo Itami and Roderick Strong. When all of a sudden, who walks up but Wesley Blake? Wesley Blake and Sarah Lee from Tough Enough, by the way, they just had their first child together. Piper Grace. See, that's a nice name, Piper Grace. I don't even remember what Blake said here. He didn't say much before he walked away. I guess this could be a late addition to the TakeOver card on TV this Wednesday. I guess we'll find out. We had a coming soon promo for the Velveteen Dream, which looks to be the gimmick that Patrick Clark is going to be doing. DIY was in the ring for a promo. They said they deserve their one-on-one match, their rematch for the NXT Tag Team titles. And Heavy Machinery and everybody else, they're going to have to get in line. And the line starts behind them. That brought out Riddick Moss and Tino Sabatelli, who seemed to make an appearance about as often as we see Haley's Comet. They said that the line starts behind them. If by that they mean the line to one of these NXT house shows that get 250 people, then yes, the line starts behind them. This led to a match. The announcers talked about how Sabatelli is a millionaire, which is probably true. He played four seasons in the NFL. DIY got the win with their stereo knee strike finish. After the match, William Regal came out to make an announcement about TakeOver, but he was interrupted by Paul Ellering. Precious Paul Ellering and the Authors of Pain. He said AOP would end DIY's career. So many acronyms here, I can't keep track of this. So AOP is going to end DIY's career. I guess that means they'll be DOA. And he said their blood will be on Regal's hands. Regal then made a ladder match for TakeOver between DIY and the Authors of Pain for the tag team titles. Hopefully one of those AOP guys doesn't accidentally toss a ladder into the crowd the way they did that chain on that one TakeOver show. The one where Ellering was in the shark cage above the ring. Although, if they did throw a ladder into the crowd and it hit one of the idiots doing the whole too sweet chant that they do now after every two count, I wouldn't cry about that. Oh, I'm going to get to that in a second when I talk about the main event, don't you worry. Cassius Ohno was doing an interview backstage when Andrade Cien Almas walked up on him, called him a pedo. Should have called him a filthy pedo. You're a filthy pedo. I can't do the rolling R, so I say pedo, and it's like... he called him a... It's like, it sounds like he called him a pedo, like a pedophile. That's not really what he called him, at least I don't think. Maybe he did. Maybe he called him a pedophile. I don't know. Why do I even find that funny? Ohno criticized Andrade for being more interested in partying than winning. So I guess he's the Matt Harvey of NXT. They made a match for next week's show. Then we had Hideo Itami and Roderick Strong in a number one contenders match for the NXT Championship at TakeOver. This was an excellent main event. This is what I said at the beginning of the podcast when I said that NXT this week I really enjoyed. It was largely, I mean, they had a lot of great video packages on this show to really promote, you know, their talent. I know what a foreign concept that is. But it was because of this match. This was an excellent main event. And, you know, on that subject, I saw an item in the Observer this week about how impressed WWE officials have been with the reaction that Roderick Strong has been getting at the live events ever since they started airing those videos on TV explaining who he is, who is the real Roderick Strong. I guess the reaction to him is like night and day, and they're very happy with the reaction. They're very impressed. It's like, oh, really? You don't say. Funny how that works, isn't it? Let's tell people why they should care about this guy. Let's tell people about him, and maybe they'll actually be able to connect to him and care about this guy. Wow, what a concept. So anyway, Strong worked over the shoulder Itami had surgery on. He's got this big, nasty scar on his shoulder, too. So Roddy hit some nasty backbreakers on Itami. Itami kept kicking out. And with each two count from the referee, the fans at Full Sail would chant, "Sweet!" As in, too sweet, which is something that the post-WrestleMania crowd started this year, and it has slowly been infecting all of the other shows, none more so than this one, none more so than NXT. I think they even did it on SmackDown, but not after every single two count. Here, in this match, every single two count, they did this. And at first, when I first heard this, and I was in that post-WrestleMania Raw crowd, I don't remember if it started on Raw or SmackDown the night after, I thought it was amusing. I was amused. I was like, aha, that's kind of funny. By the 15th time here in this match, like even here in this match, the first couple of times, I'm like, ah, that's kind of funny. By the 15th time, right, you're getting deeper into the match. They're going for some dramatic near falls here. All I kept hearing is, sweet, sweet, sweet. It's like, way to take something fun and beat it to death, you idiots. You know what I mean? Like, is it really necessary to do that after every two count? Every single one? Like, I'm all for having fun. I've defended the Full Sail crowd before. I am a believer in that. You pay money for a ticket to go have a good time. You should be able to have a good time. But, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, these people can be a little too smart, I think, for their own good sometimes. It's like you take something that's kind of cute and kind of amusing and kind of fun, and it's like, we must do this now after every fall. You know, it's like the 10 count with Ty Dillinger. 10. Everyone chants 10, 10, 10. Now, every single match on the main roster, if you go outside the ring and the ref starts counting, it's 10. So he's counting 1, 2, 3, and it's like 10, 10, 10. And I wonder how, like, the wrestlers have to adjust to this, because, you know, there are times where they're kind of selling an injury or whatever, and are they going to get back in the ring in time? You know what's going to happen one of these days. You're going to have a loud crowd, and it's up to the referee to really, like, forcefully, loudly call out where he is in his count. But you're going to have one day a loud crowd that is so loud you can't hear the referee, and the guy's going to think the ref's up to 6 when he's actually up to 10, because the people are just chanting 10 nonstop, and they're going to screw up the whole match. It's inevitable. It's going to happen at some point. But that doesn't even bother me as much as this did. This almost took me out of the match, and I was enjoying this match. I was having a lot of fun watching this match. They were getting deep into the near falls in this match, and all I kept hearing was, sweet, too sweet. I'm like, oh my God. Like, enough. It's ridiculous. Anyway, Atami. He had a Falcon Arrow on Strong off the top rope for another 2. Sweet! See, now they got me doing it. Strong came at him with the chops. Itami came at him with the kicks. I would not want to be kicked by Hideo Itami. I think I would want to be chopped even less by Roderick Strong. Itami hit the Huluva kick in the corner. Roddy slumped down. Itami came back with the delayed drop kick in the corner. Then he set him up with a go to sleep. After Roddy shoved him, it basically told him, hey, I dare you to do it. And so he hit the GTS, got the 3 count. Hideo Itami will meet Bobby Roode in Chicago next weekend for the NXT Championship. After the match, Strong and Itami showed respect to one another. This was an excellent match. This was Roderick Strong's best match since coming over to NXT. It was the best Hideo Itami match I've seen since he came back from injury. So this was 2 thumbs up. Now, talking about TakeOver, we may as well get to TakeOver Chicago, which is coming up next Saturday, which means I got to do predictions now. Now, after what happened to the Ring of Honor show on Friday night, which I'm going to talk about here in a second, I already said I expected that we would see Adam Cole pop up in the crowd in Chicago at TakeOver. I think even more so now. I still feel that way. I do believe that we will probably see him on this show. And, you know, hey, maybe WWE knows that, and they swerve us and they put somebody else out there, because supposedly they've had interest in a lot of ROH guys, Donovan Dijak. I mean, I've heard a lot of names floated, names that really haven't even been around. They've left Ring of Honor. It's almost like these guys have been in like a holding pattern or something until they sign with WWE. So maybe they swerve us, they throw some other ROH guy out there, and then Adam Cole pops up a few weeks later. I don't know, but I still expect him to be in the crowd next Saturday. We have Tyler Bate defending his WWE United Kingdom Championship against the Bruiserweight, Pete Dunne. I'm going with Pete Dunne. I'm a big Pete Dunne fan. I think he wins the championship here. I think this would also be a good opener for the show. I think they open the show with it. Authors of Pain against DIY in a ladder match for the Tag Team Championship. I'm going to go with DIY. I'm going to say they get the belts back on DIY. Asuka defends her NXT Women's Championship now in a triple threat match against Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross. Ember Moon is out with the shoulder injury. There ain't no way Asuka's losing this match. there's less than 1% chance that happens. So I'm going with Asuka to retain her championship, keep the streak alive. And in the main event, Bobby Roode defends the NXT Championship against Hideo Itami. Hideo Itami has been starved of his moment for so long. I still firmly believe on that Beast in the East show a couple of years ago that it was going to be a Tommy's moment. I really feel like that was his moment to hit the GTS finally after all the teasing, and he was going to win the championship in Japan against Kevin Owens, but he got hurt. And all those plans went out the window, and it's been just one problem and one injury after another since then, and so I want to see this guy have his moment at some point. I don't feel like this is that moment. I just don't feel like it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like the right time. So I'm going with Bobby Roode. I think Bobby Roode is going to retain the championship here. Now, Itami tweeted a few days ago, I'm sure a lot of you guys saw this, he tweeted, Chicago is the perfect city to hit my go-to sleep. And I read that and I'm like, oh, Hideo, you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. I mean, he's not wrong. Punk did take the move from him. I think he's even admitted it. Just like Bryan. Daniel Bryan admitted to taking the knee, the flying knee from Itami as well. But all I can say is get ready because you know the chants are coming. I mean, it's Chicago. You're probably going to get them anyway. But I'm not sure that making a comment like that is going to do anything to spare him from the Punk chants next weekend. But again, I'm going with Bobby Roode. I think he retains. It's, I don't know, on paper, it's, again, not the strongest takeover card. I do think it actually looks stronger on paper than the last show does, or the last show did. And I think this could be a sleeper show. There's some potential here on this show. And maybe the match I'm looking forward to the most is the UK title match. So I am looking forward to this show. Now, on his blog, Jim Ross announced that he will be joining Nigel McGuinness as the announce team for the upcoming WWE UK series that's airing on the network later this month. They have not given a date, I don't believe, although somebody tweeted something. Might have been a screenshot from the WWE Network listing that showed, I think, this Thursday. Either this Thursday, is it this Thursday or next Thursday? I think this Thursday as the first night, because they taped two nights in Norwich a few weeks ago. So it's very possible this thing could be debuting on the network this week. Don't quote me on that 100%. I would jump on the network and check out the listings. But I could have sworn I saw something on the 18th at 11 p.m. that said WWE UK network special. So I don't think they've officially made anything, you know, they haven't announced anything yet publicly. But it's coming up in the next week or two, and JR and Nigel are going to be calling the action. I think that's a great pairing. JR is obviously very good at what he does. I mean, that goes without saying. But Nigel is familiar with all of the UK talent where JR may not be. And Nigel, I thought, was great with Michael Cole on those UK tournament shows back in January. So I'm really looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to the action. But I think in terms of an announced team, if Michael Cole and Nigel McGuinness killed it in January, there's no reason Jim Ross and Nigel McGuinness aren't going to kill it here in May. So I think it's going to be really good. Now, in that same blog, JR also announced that Access Television is going to be announcing their broadcast plans on, ironically, Thursday, May 18th, for the two New Japan shows that are coming to Long Beach that are airing on July 1st and July 2nd. He, according to Jim Ross, he says, "You're going to like what you hear." So it sounds like, if you read between the lines here, not only will we be getting Jim Ross for the UK series on the WWE Network, but we're probably going to be getting Jim Ross calling those New Japan shows on Access. And you know that WWE had to be sweating that World of Sports stuff with ITV to sign Jim Ross to a contract when he still had time left on his Access television deal, knowing that he's still going to be calling New Japan matches, another wrestling promotion, really a competing wrestling promotion, but we'll sign him to a contract anyway, and we'll put him on our TV. I mean, you know they did not want him becoming the play-by-play guy on that ITV World of Sports show. So now we get to hear him call WWE and New Japan matches, at least for the next few months. Speaking of that World of Sports show, it may be over before it even gets started. According to the Wrestling Observer, the next set of tapings, after the tapings for the pilot that had already aired, they were going to move ahead with the show. I think they ordered 10 episodes. The tapings were scheduled for the end of this month, and then they were canceled. Not because of a scheduling conflict with Impact, which was the public story, but because Impact, apparently NITV, who are partnering or were partnering on this project, apparently there was some sort of a business disagreement. That's the real story behind the postponement or the cancellation of the tapings. And so that's not good. I don't know what the nature of the business disagreement is, but it's Impact, so take your pick. I mean, you're dealing with Impact and the Jarretts, and who the hell knows what the hell's going on here. So now the whole thing may not happen. It is up in the air now. The wrestlers don't know anything. All they've been told now is that the shows are not going to tape until 2018. And if that's the case, who the hell knows who's going to even be available by then? I mean, what are these guys supposed to do? Just sit around and wait? It's kind of like the Lucha Underground stuff. You know, I feel for those guys, but maybe they're signed to a contract. Maybe they can't go anywhere else. Maybe they're just kind of stuck now. I don't know. But I'm sure WWE is very happy with that news. The wrestlers might not be, but I'm sure WWE is loving it. Now, I mentioned Impact. We kind of skipped out on this last week because Impact really wasn't all that good. But this week, it is the return of a little segment that I call Say Something Nice About Impact.
Say something nice about Impact.
Now, on this Impact show, there was a segment where EC3 came out dressed up as a cowboy, because right now he's feuding with the cowboy James Storm. So he's out there with the cowboy hat and the boots and the whole deal. James Storm eventually runs out. EC3 attacks him. He handcuffs James Storm to the bottom rope. So James Storm is standing outside the ring with his back turned. And EC3 takes off his leather belt. He begins to whip James Storm on the back with the belt over and over and over and over again. To the point where James Storm, after the fact, after the angle, went on Twitter. He posted a photo of his back. His skin was bubbling up. His back was beet red. Broken blood vessels. Again, the skin, you can almost see the skin bubbling up in some places. This was nasty. This was as vicious a leather strap attack on a wrestling show that as I've seen in many, many years. So they went all out here to make this look legit. It looked painful. There was a funny moment where as EC3 is whipping this guy and the referees are trying to get him to stop, he kind of tripped backwards. He fell backwards over a production guy who was crouched down behind him. Didn't mean anything by it, but EC3 didn't care. He started whipping the production guy with the strap. You know, because EC3 comes out, he does comedy stuff sometimes, but this was a serious angle. I mean, this was an angle that was done to make him look like the most vicious man in the world. And again, I was struck by how vicious the whole leather strap deal on Storm was. He took a beating, man. I mean, he took a lashing here in this segment. You got to go online and take a look at the photo. It was pretty brutal, and I thought it was good. I thought it was well done. And that is something nice to say about Impact.
Say something nice about Impact.
Ring of Honor in New Japan had its War of the Worlds pay-per-view on Friday night from the Hammerstein Ballroom. I wanted to get tickets to the show. I tried too late, and by then they were pretty much none left, so I made other plans. I heard the show was very good. A lot of you guys were praising the show. I do want to go back and watch at least some of the key matches, if not all of it. Now, what I was able to see, I saw clips and such from the Adam Cole Hiroshi Tanahashi match. What I saw was very good, and I did see the post-match angle. Now, before I get to that, though, there was some other news. Before the show, there was a ceremony in the ring to announce that New Japan will crown its first ever IWGP United States Champion this July. When they come to Long Beach for two events, there's going to be a round-robin tournament over the course of those two nights to crown the very first champion. Jay Lethal has already been announced as being part of the tournament. That comes courtesy of Busted Open Radio. So these guys are going all in, New Japan, that is, as far as this U.S. expansion. I saw a picture of the belt. It's got that red strap, like the Universal title, so it's like, ugh. I think it's pretty ugly. It's huge too, man. That belt is gigantic. The big news coming out of the show was Adam Cole, after losing to Hiroshi Tanahashi, being kicked out, or should I say super kicked out, of the Bullet Club by the Young Bucks, and Marty Scurll joining the group in his place, very reminiscent of the way in which AJ Styles was booted from Bullet Club and replaced as the leader by Kenny Omega last year. Styles then went to WWE. The Adam Cole to WWE rumors have been around for a long time now. And I said when his contract expired a few weeks ago that I expected him in the crowd to take over in Chicago. I'm sticking to that. I still think he'll show up there. But I watched the angle as it unfolded. They had Kenny Omega. It was on video. They showed a Kenny Omega video where he announced that Adam Cole was fired. The lights went out when they came back on. There was Marty Scurll in the ring holding an umbrella. When he unfurled the umbrella, it had a giant Bullet Club logo on it. and the Young Bucks hit dual super kicks on Cole. It was well done. The people went nuts for it. And hey, you know, Bullet Club just keeps on running. You know, hey, Bullet Club, you would think by now, kind of like the NWO, eventually ran out of steam. Bullet Club has been able to, with the turnover, with some guys who come in and then they leave, they you know, kind of promote somebody new from within, or they induct somebody new into the group. They've found ways to keep Bullet Club relevant and kind of fun and still a big deal in wrestling, whereas the NWO, which went on for, how long did the NWO go on for? Eventually you kind of hit a wall where, and I think the problem with the NWO was when you start putting people in like Michael Wall Street and Vincent and Bryan Adams, the wrestler, not the singer, people tend to lose interest. And I think the one good thing they've done with Bullet Club, they have not gotten too big, and they try to keep it interesting. They try to put people in Bullet Club that you actually care about. Like, Marty Scurll's a great wrestler. Marty Scurll is very popular. Marty Scurll is not, like Vincent was in the NWO. I mean, these are, you know, top flight talents here. And I think that's a big part of why the Bullet Club has been able to stay as relevant as they have. And in the main event, Chris Daniels retained his Ring of Honor World title over Cody Rhodes and Jay Lethal with the best moonsault ever, while Cody had Lethal locked in the figure four. And like I said, I do want to go back and watch some of the other key matches from the show, because I heard a lot of positive things about it, and I would encourage everybody, if you didn't see the Ring of Honor show, based on all the feedback I've gotten, definitely sounds like something worth checking out, especially after this week of WWE television. Oh my God, I could see Ring of Honor being a nice palate cleanser after a week of such god-awful boring TV. One more note, and this does concern Ring of Honor, and this is a very big story in the media world. Sinclair Broadcast Group is about to become a hell of a lot bigger after announcing a deal worth nearly $4 billion to acquire Tribune Media Company and its 42 television stations across the country. That would be in addition to the 173 Sinclair already owns, which includes a lot of local ABC affiliates, NBC, CBS. And it would put Sinclair-owned stations in over 70% of U.S. households if the deal goes through, which it is expected to, under the new head of the FCC, who has been, who has already been taking to relaxing some of the existing rules and limits with respect to media ownership. Now, this is great news for Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is owned by Sinclair. Right now, potentially, it gives Ring of Honor, with this deal, if it goes through, clearance in markets like New York. So here where I live, it would likely put ROH on our WPIX station with Channel 11, which means for the first time, I would have Ring of Honor on one of our main over-the-air broadcast channels. It would also put Ring of Honor on in other markets for the first time. Again, I say potentially, because even though, you know, Sinclair may get clearance in all these markets, it's not 100% guarantee ROH would end up on these stations, but I would say there's a pretty good chance. Other markets include LA, Chicago, Miami, Houston, Philadelphia, and a bunch of others. These are major markets. I mean, these are big cities. These are major media markets. And so it's good news if you're a wrestling fan. It's great news if you are a Ring of Honor employee, a Ring of Honor performer, or a Ring of Honor fan. It is bad news if you are like me and you are not so much a fan of media consolidation and big corporate mergers and that sort of thing. I think this would be a terrible move. There was just a story the other day, in fact, about Sinclair. What they call they call them these must runs, is what they call them, which are basically news segments that they produce, and they send them out to a lot of their affiliates, and the affiliates are required to run these segments as part of their local newscasts. And it just, you know, it makes the people who work at these stations very uncomfortable when you get orders from the top that, you know, hey, here's a tape, here's whatever, you have to run this. I mean, I could go on a whole rant about, you know, all of the cable news, every single one of the cable news channels, they all push their own agenda. But, I mean, news at the local level should never be compromised. And it still happens. I mean, Disney owns ABC. So here, like, I'll give an example. Here on our local ABC affiliate, WABC-TV, I cringe whenever they do a segment on Disney, or every now and then they'll, like, Good Morning America or something, they'll be in Times Square with a bunch of Disney characters, like, freaking Goofy in costume and stuff, and they're promoting the brand in some way or some new ride at their theme park or some nonsense. It shouldn't happen. That stuff should not be happening. I know it does, but it shouldn't. So I am not a fan of this kind of stuff. Big companies like this in the media getting even bigger and gobbling up all the other, you know, little stations. But if it goes through, and it probably will, and you're Ring of Honor, you have to be very happy with this news. Time for sad tweet. There was apparently a bit of controversy last Sunday involving a member of the band Kings of Leon bashing pro wrestling. And you know how fans can be when someone thumbs their nose at wrestling. They tend to take it very personally. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, of course. I really don't let it bother me unless they cop some sort of elitist attitude about it. Like, why would somebody watch pro wrestling? Which is kind of what this guy did. So this guy, Jordan Followill is his name. He's the bassist for the group. He went on Twitter and said, hey, adults, let's maybe not watch professional wrestling, you know? So tons of wrestlers started tweeting back at him, one of whom was Speedball Mike Bailey, who stole a Seinfeld reference and told him the washed-up alternative rock band store called, they're running out of you. You're not going to get that unless you're a Seinfeld fan. That probably sounds really lame. So Veda Scott, remember her? Veda Scott left Ring of Honor late last year. I would not be surprised at all if she popped up in this women's tournament that WWE is doing very soon. She replied to Bailey's comments with a shrimp emoji, yet another Seinfeld reference. Now, in response to that, the Kings of Leon douche replied back to Veda. I guess maybe he took it personally. Maybe he thought that she was talking about his manhood or something. I don't know. But he responded to Veda and said, close your legs. Well, that was it. The poor bastard lit the fuse, and there was no putting it out at that point. Now, he deleted the comment to Veda, but people screen-capped it because nothing ever really goes away on the internet. Tons of wrestlers started tweeting at him. Wrestling fans went after him. He posted another half dozen tweets backpedaling, and then he started trolling people. This turned into a whole big thing. I didn't even know about it until many days later because I don't give a shit about Kings of Leon. I don't follow them on Twitter. I don't listen to their music. I know one song of theirs, and the only reason is because all the radio stations here, when it was popular, would play it non-stop. All they did was play this stupid song. Was it Lose Somebody or Use Somebody or Abuse Somebody or whatever the fuck it's called? So this guy is entitled to his opinion, but, you know, telling Veda to close her legs tells me all I need to know about this guy. Apparently, at one of their shows many years ago, one of their concerts, a pigeon shit in this guy's mouth while they were on stage performing. I so wish I could have been there to see that. I think we all owe that pigeon a debt of gratitude. Okay, now, with that out of the way, I did promise you guys a very special guest here on this Mother's Day edition of the Sound Off. Her first appearance in 10 years, if you can believe it, in a decade. I've been doing this show almost a full decade. We're going to have Mama Monster here sitting with me, so I'm going to go grab her, get her in here, get her all set up. And we're going to talk to her for a little while. We'll get to the mailbag later. A lot of good stuff still coming up here on the podcast. And we will be right back with our special guest. So, in honor of Mother's Day, I wanted to do something special. I have a very special guest here with me now, making her Sound Off debut. Can you believe it?
Yes.
Can you believe it? Can
yes.
you believe
this? Finally.
This is the first time in 10 years. Now I do the show on Sunday, so that's... Right. 10 years worth of Mother's Days that I've actually had you here on the show.
Okay, well, but whose fault is that?
Well, you can blame me. That's fine. I have Mama Monster here with me, if she can keep a straight face, because you missed it as I tried to have her do a promo for me. It took about 7 or 8 minutes to get her to calm down. She couldn't keep a straight face when I tried to get her to actually say... This is
Mama Monster, and you're listening to the Sound Off.
Okay, there you go. I didn't say you had to do a promo now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Does this feel weird?
Yes.
Well, it does.
It does.
Well, that's why I haven't had you on until now.
Gee, thank you very much.
Well, but happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
It is Mother's Day all
thank
together.
You.
We're all together here for this this holiday weekend here. We had a very nice dinner the other night.
Yes, we did.
You and I and the other son, we'll call him.
Call him Little Monster.
Little Monster. And so I have the best listeners in the world. They're always asking me, you know, how's your mom doing? You haven't said anything about her
That's
recently
nice.
Because yeah, I've talked about your health situation here on the show before.
Oh, I'm so
you know they know what you've been through and what you're going through now, and so they're always asking me questions. So how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling okay. I mean, I'm hanging in there. Let's put it that way. You know, good days, bad days, to be expected.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm doing doing okay so far. So good.
Well, you were here for me this week. I had my own little test. And
yes.
So,
yes. Of course. Of course.
You were very helpful. You were very helpful.
I went through that a couple of times.
I know.
So
that's why I was so freaked out, because I knew what you had gone through, and so now here I am in the same situation, and I'm thinking to myself, "This sucks."
Yes, it does.
But
I'm not gonna say it doesn't.
But yeah, let's shift gears here for a second, because I don't think we've ever talked about this. Now I know Dad was a wrestling fan,
mm-hmm.
obviously. I mean,
yes.
That's pretty much where
yes.
I got it from.
Yes.
But were you a wrestling fan? Did you ever watch it? Do you ever remember watching it
yes.
at all when you were
yes.
younger? You do.
Not when I was younger.
Well, I mean, when you were younger, maybe even before you got married or...
No, actually, no, my great-grandfather did. He used to sit there when it was, I guess, Lucha Libre on Channel 47.
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And he used to sit there and he used to make the, like, you know, with the punching this way and punching that way. He used to scream at the TV.
Mm.
And everybody used to tell him, shut up!
Now, Dad was at the very first WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Madison Square Garden.
Yes,
right?
In 1985.
Mm-hmm. And he bought me a WrestleMania shirt. I still have it. It's laying... It's about six sizes too small.
Yeah,
it won't fit me now.
I was going to say, it might just about fit your head.
Yeah, but he was there in that shirt he
yes.
bought at the event.
Yes.
And,
of course he did.
Yeah.
He had to bring you home a little something. And that was the thing that he liked. And you watched with him and... I guess like fathers and sons watch baseball together or hockey together, whatever. His thing was wrestling, and that's what you used to watch together. And you seemed to, I guess, take to it so easily.
And you would watch? I mean, when he would watch?
I would watch him back in, was it Bob Backlund days?
Yeah, like early 80s.
And, when it was Bruno San Martino.
Okay.
Know, back.
Well, that predates me, though,
yeah.
by a few years.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm dating
that's
myself
what,
now, but.
Well, that's when I started like watching.
Paying attention
he was watching.
To it.
Well, because he was. So it's like, you know, if you sit with somebody and they have the baseball game on, you're sitting and watching the baseball game. So it was kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, you know, wrestling, wrestling, wrestling. And as the wrestling grew, and then you came along and then, you know, he used to sit with him and watch that.
Then I came along. I knocked on the door one day. I just showed up one day. I said, hey, I'm here. And they took me in. Now, my earliest memory of being at a show, it was around Christmas time in, I think it was 1987. It was in Madison Square Garden. Main event was, well, go ahead. I want to see if you know this.
I don't remember the main event.
Well,
I remember
well, because
Jimmy
this is,
Hart.
Well, this is the only thing I remember, and I'm pretty sure it was the main event. It was Randy Savage, and it was the Honky Tonk Man. And Jimmy Hart was in a shark cage
right,
above the ring.
Right,
right.
I remember that.
I don't remember anything else from
that
show.
That no.
But that I remember.
Well, that would stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be my early... But so you remember being at that show. Because
yeah,
I think all
being,
of us were there. I mean, you
yeah.
and Dad and me and I don't know if the other one would have been, but...
No, the little... When? 87?
87.
No, he
yeah,
wasn't.
Yeah.
No. Too young.
Now, you also took me to the very first Fan Fest.
Yes.
That was back in 94, yes. WrestleMania 10.
Well, actually, how that came about was we went to wrestling, regular wrestling show, I guess on a Saturday, whatever it was, and they were handing out these tickets. And I used to say to you, just take, you know, you and your brother, just take whatever they give you. You don't know what it is. And it turned out to be actually comp tickets that I went to Madison Square Garden, turned them in, and it was free. I mean, it was like, I don't know, it was like $22 a ticket or something, but I got all the four tickets for free. So we went to FanFest, and that's when you met Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, well, it was a lot more casual then, too, because you were just bumping into wrestlers. So at one point, I literally remember bumping into Nikolai Volkoff. He's standing there. He's got no pants on. I'm bumping into this guy. I mean, now you could wait in a line for 45 minutes just to get one autograph.
But we did that for Shawn Michaels one time.
Well, some of them were more popular than others, but it was
not
just
a FanFest, but I remember doing that.
Right. Well, I'm talking specifically at FanFest, but it was very...
It was much different. They had displays. Like, they had, remember, they had the casket for The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, a display that was there.
They had a dunk doink tank.
Right, right. They had, it was, the like, a U-shape kind of the ring, part of the ring. The front part had nothing, and the rest of it did. And that's where you met Earl Hebner. He was in there. There weren't as long lines, I guess, as there is now. Because, I guess, at that time, to be honest, I don't think it was as popular. It was coming of age at that time. And it wasn't as popular as it is now. At that time, I mean, you had lines, but not these mega lines and these humongous venues that you have now. You know, it was much, much different. But it was small, on a small scale. It was more personal, and it was nice. You met Vince McMahon.
People got a kick out of the photo when I put that on Facebook. I'm not even looking in the camera. He's got this great photo of me with Vince McMahon, and he's smiling into the camera.
Right.
I'm looking off probably at Doink getting
dunked. No.
What was I looking at?
I know exactly what you were looking at. Because
do I want to know?
Because Vince McMahon was going to take a picture with you, and you were too busy looking all over the place, and everyone's calling you, Jason, look this way, Jason, look this way. And you're turning around to see who's calling you, and we took the picture because we didn't have a long time to sit there and wait for you to sit there and pose. So we just took the picture. So it looks like you're looking... Who knows what?
Now, we went to that fan fest. Why didn't we go to WrestleMania? Why? I don't remember you ever telling me why we didn't get tickets to actually go to WrestleMania.
I think it was too expensive. Because I remember, I mean, it was like, I remember the seats all the way down front were like $300 a seat.
Those are the seats all the way back now.
Yeah, well, that was
you
then.
Could add a couple of zeros onto that for the front row.
Well, that was then. That was like the first maybe like 10 rows. But it was, and in those days, you got to keep the chair that you sat in.
Well, you get to do that now, too.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You spend about, what, $5,000, $10,000 for a chair?
Give or take.
Go to Home Depot for $20,
you get a chair. That's what I say.
But I think that's why.
Now, I've never mentioned this before. You basically bankrolled the wrestling magazine that I used to do. I don't think I've ever mentioned this before.
No.
This was back when I was in junior high.
Cost me a fortune.
Well, this was back when I was in junior high. New Generation Magazine is what I called it.
Yes.
That was back in the days of Print Shop Deluxe, right on the old IBM Aptiva that we had.
Oh, my gosh.
I put together these magazines every month, and they were every bit of, what, like 20, 30 pages probably?
Something like that.
Something like that.
I still have one that you autographed.
I'd have this stack of pages, and she would take them to Staples every single month and have however many copies printed. I don't remember, you know, what...
Front and back.
At a loss...
It cost me $22 an issue.
I was the TNA of wrestling magazines. I would charge my friends something like 50 cents per cop. Was it a dollar?
A dollar.
Really?
Yes.
Was it a dollar?
Yes, it was a dollar.
Okay. Well, good. I had the
right
idea.
Your brother was the banker.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
and it would cost, but it would cost you something like, what was it, $60 or something?
$22.
Was it 20?
A copy.
Every single month.
I got nothing.
And she got nothing from it. So she.
I got nothing.
Nothing
from
to show
it.
For it.
No.
But that was like, it was my creative outlet.
It was constructive.
Right.
So I didn't really care.
Right.
It was fine.
Right.
It was the same thing as if you were reading something. I would buy you a bunch of books. So
right.
I didn't really mind it that much. It would have been nice to have been compensated a little bit, but...
Well, we could talk about that.
That's what...
But you were a wrestling mom. That's what...
That's what you do. That's what you do. Mm-hmm.
I called into PLJ... The local radio stations. This was a few years after that. Whenever they used to have ticket giveaways, and you could tell the popularity in wrestling back then, I think, as compared to, I mean, now it's so much bigger. I mean, they're making so much more money. But just in terms of popularity, I don't think they really have that anymore. At least not on the local stations here. I don't hear them having, you know, raw ticket giveaways the way they were back in the late 90s.
And I think some of that has to do with the fact that the way of wrestling has changed over the years. I really do. I personally think that's what it is. But times change, so everybody changes with the time.
Yeah, and they would have ticket giveaways for Raw. They would do house show giveaways to, like, live events at the Nassau Coliseum.
Oh, they did that a lot.
Right, but, I mean, I won, like, six times.
That was all Raw shows.
I mean, one of those times, there was a live event at Nassau, one of those times. But all the other times, there was a SmackDown in there. Most of it was Monday Night Raw. The first time we ever went, the luxury box seats. That was in Jersey.
How could you beat that?
I mean, and
you
that
can't
was,
beat that. But you that, met Owen. You met.
Well, I was going to say. I mean, and it's kind of sad because half the people we met in that box are dead now. But you know, we met Mankind.
Yes.
We met Owen.
Right.
We met Luna.
Yes.
Who passed away?
Mark. She did.
Yeah, she passed away. And Mark Henry.
Mark Henry.
We met them all up in the box.
Yes.
Nice as can be.
Right.
Owen probably was the nicest out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fun experience.
Actually, they were all very nice.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, Foley, this was a few weeks after he had the big Hell in a Cell match where he fell off the cage and then he climbed back up and he fell off again. This was maybe, what, 2-3 weeks maybe after that pay-per-view? And I remember looking at him and he's just kind of sitting there and he looks...
Yeah, he was sitting there. Well, I mean,
he looks like a beaten-down old man.
Well, he was kind of beaten up.
But Owen were just casually, as they're signing autographs, talking about their kids and I got to pick my kid up from school.
Mick Foley especially, he always was like that.
Mm-hmm.
Always for the kids. Always did things for them. Always, whether he put on a brave face and he was actually hurting or whatever the case was. He was very, very nice, very sweet. And we met him more than one time. At the wrestling restaurant.
That's right.
Remember? We met him.
That's right.
He was there with his children.
In Times Square.
At that time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He was there with his children, and you could see the family man part of him there. And that was nice to see. I think that's very nice when you see performers or sports figures, especially, or sports entertainment figures, whatever, and you see them a little bit more human than their bigger-than-life creations that they create, you know, I like that. It's the same thing with anything else, with rock stars and so on and so forth. I like seeing them as regular people because they really are regular people. Some people, you know, have attitudes, but that makes a person and that's what makes the world go round.
I was going to mention the fact that you drove past the exit in going to that show and then decided to tell us...
Is that the highlight? I mean, everybody seems to remember this.
Do as I say, not as I do. Backing up on the Jersey Turnpike, no less. Because, you know, the normal person, this was before GPS. And apparently, if you missed your exit, you were going into some far, far off dimension for which there was no return.
Right.
Even though you could just go get off at the next exit and circle back around.
Well, I didn't know where I was. That was the first time I went to the Meadowlands, so I didn't know.
Here she is backing up. If you ever pass an exit on the highway, don't do that.
No. Do not do that.
Don't do that.
No, that is not a good thing or the right thing to do.
Anyway, I don't want to drag this out for too long, but before I let you go, I thought it would be fun to test your wrestling knowledge, right? Because you've been around it for so long, I want to see how much of it you've absorbed by osmosis. Because I think I think you know more than most people would think.
If you remember that time. It was a pay-per-view. It was Bret Hart when he won the title. Shawn Michaels won the title. I'm sorry. And it was the Iron Man match.
That's right. WrestleMania.
That you have the plaque with the...
WrestleMania 12.
And I was the one who was screaming at the TV. I'm sitting on the floor.
She was more into that match than I was. I was bored until the last like 5 or 10 minutes. But I've made my thoughts clear on that match before. See, at least I have you here now to back me up. You were more excited and into it than I was.
I admit it. I was the one that was screaming at the TV on the floor that like people do with sports. That's what I was doing with that.
So I've prepared 10 questions, or technically 11, but I want to see how many of these you can get right. Now, we did not talk about this in advance. I did not show you any of these questions.
I have absolutely no idea what he's going to ask.
And I'm going to be very disappointed if you don't get at least half of these right, because I think these are mostly softballs.
Uh-oh.
So are you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, here we go.
Uh-oh.
Trivia time. I call this Mother's Day Madness.
Mother's That's Day my name for Madness. This.
All right, number one. Who were the original three members of the NWO?
Hulk Hogan.
It's one.
Kevin Nash.
It's two.
Scott Hall.
Ah! Very nice. See, we're off to a good start.
That's about it. That's what we end.
This is even easier. Question number two. What tag team was Shawn Michaels part of when he first joined WWE?
Rockers. The Rockers.
And who is
Marty Jannetty.
Very nice. You know, he's doing porn now?
Really?
He's got offers.
Oh, my God.
He's got offers.
Oh, this is where things lead.
Question number three.
Mm-hmm.
What was Kurt Angle's big claim to fame before he came to WWE? Kurt Angle was known for something. He was nationally famous.
Oh, he was a Olympic something. I know he had a medal.
Be more specific.
Olympic.
You're almost there.
Bodybuilder, wasn't he?
No. You were on the right track.
Something. Olympic something.
Well, you said medalist. I'll give it to you. He was an Olympic gold medalist.
Okay.
So you were right.
Gold medalist for what?
For wrestling.
Okay.
No, for shot put. What else would he be a gold medalist for?
I just remember he had like a little frog or something tattooed on his shoulder.
He does have a tattoo on his shoulder. Question number four.
Right.
You better get this right. The Undertaker's manager, Paul Bearer, used to carry what object to the ring with him?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, if I don't get this right, then I can just give it all.
You work in a funeral home. You better get this right.
It's an urn.
There you go. I was going to say. I was going to end this interview right here. Question number five.
Mm-hmm.
At what WrestleMania did Hulk Hogan body slam Andre the Giant?
Oh my gosh. Wasn't that the one that was outdoors? And that was like, that was supposed to be the really big one?
Which one? Which year? Which WrestleMania which number?
Oh, I don't know which number. I don't know why. No, it can't be. I want to say 95, but I don't think that's right. I don't know.
Well, that would have required a hell of a magic 93? Trick since Andre was dead by 95.
93?
Andre died in 93.
So it was before that?
It was WrestleMania 3, 1987.
Was that the one where it was the three venues?
No, that was two.
Oh.
That was the year before. This was in 87.
I'm getting my mind confused.
Yeah, this was at the Silver Dome WrestleMania
3.
All right, so that's your first one wrong.
Okay. I remember that one.
Question number six. We were just talking about Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
Mick Foley portrayed three different characters
during
his time in WWE. What were they?
Mankind.
One.
Would Mick Foley...
No.
Okay. Mankind. Oh my gosh. Wait. And we had Sacco the Puppet over there.
Yeah, I bought Sacco, by the way, when they were selling Sacco in WWE shop. One sock I paid $8 for. I'm a wrestling fan.
You could have gotten a sock and drew eyes on it.
I should have stuffed that down my own throat.
Wait. It was Mankind. Oh, my gosh. What's his name? Cactus? Oh, I can't.
My great-grandfather?
Your great-grandfather? Cactus Jack.
Cactus Jack. That's okay. Two.
Cactus Jack.
And there's one more.
Mankind.
A lesser-known personality.
You know, I really don't know.
All right. You're never going to get this.
Who is it?
Dude Love.
You see, I completely forgot about
Dude
that
Love.
One because that was a very little minor...
Yeah, but Dude Love was like a hippie that goes back to your younger years, right?
No.
What do you mean no?
I don't remember.
Tie-dye. Right.
I didn't have tie-dye. I had bell bottoms, but I didn't have... I don't know, maybe.
All right.
You're talking 60s. I was 70s.
Question number seven.
Yeah.
You know who Triple H is, of course.
Yeah.
What do the three H's in Triple H stand for?
Helmsley.
Very good.
Yes.
All right. Rowdy Roddy Piper. This is question eight. We're coming to the end.
I liked him.
Rowdy Roddy Piper used to host his own talk show segment. What
Piper's
was the name
pit.
Of that set?
Piper's
you gotta
pit.
Let me finish the question.
Oh, I know the
She's
answer.
Showing off here.
Well, I'll never make Jeopardy, I guess.
All right, Piper's Pit, you got it right. So you're doing great.
Right.
Question nine. Now this might be a little tougher.
Okay.
Although this person was at one of the live events that I remember going to when I was younger, so you should know who this is. What was the name of the early 90s wrestler who had a voodoo character?
Papa Shango.
Ah. Man, I should have made these harder. Papa Shango. I'll tell you what, I'll expand on that. Papa Shango resurfaced in WWF many years later as a completely different character
right. In
the Attitude Era. What character did he portray?
Oh, gosh. That wasn't Virgil. No. Yeah, I remember, but I don't remember his name.
Well, he was the Godfather.
Oh, okay.
He was a pimp.
I never.
Yeah, you would not.
No, I wouldn't have gotten that. You know what kept coming to my mind? The Junkyard Dog.
Hmm. A little before that time.
Yeah, I think so. Just a little bit.
Question number 10. Mm-hmm. This might be a tough one, but I have faith in you. Maybe that's my fault, but I do. Who is the man who ran down Stone Cold Steve Austin with a car? There was a pay-per-view in 1999, out in the parking lot. He ran down Stone Cold. They did the big reveal later on TV, who did it. It was a whodunit.
I remember them pouring cement into a vet.
That was not what I'm talking about.
No. Was it McMahon?
No. He was Samoan.
No, not The Rock.
No. I'm giving you all the hints I can here.
Wait. No, Don Morocco.
He used to dance.
Was old. Oh, my God.
The fat guy.
Yeah, I know. I remember. I can't think.
I'm trying to help you here.
I know. Wait a minute. The fat guy.
He was fat.
Well, it wasn't Still King is. Kong Bundy.
No, it wasn't. Yes, King Kong Bundy, ladies and gentlemen, ran down Stone Cold Steve Austin in some alternate dimension.
No. Don't say it. I gotta think. I'm thinking.
Well, the Samoan dynasty is big.
Yeah, I know it is. Whoa.
It was Rikishi.
Oh, right.
It was Rikishi.
You know what you should have said? Wasn't he the one that looked like a sumo wrestler?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would have remembered.
I told you he was fat, and he danced.
So fat and dancing doesn't mean anything.
Apparently not to you.
People are fat and they dance and there's nothing wrong with it.
Do you know anybody personally who's fat who dances?
I'm taking the fifth right now.
You want to divulge that on the air here?
I'm taking the fifth, thank you.
All right, now there's one last question here. Mm-hmm. Favorite wrestler of all time, if you had to choose one. You personally, favorite wrestler of all time.
I had to choose one.
Yeah, if you had to pick one wrestler who to you would be your favorite of all time, who would it be?
It doesn't matter, old, new. It
doesn't matter. Dead, alive, current, old.
They have all of them.
I mean, I've said, me personally, I've said mine is Bret Hart. Mm-hmm. Yours may be different.
There's Hulk Hogan and there's Shawn Michaels.
Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels. Mm-hmm. Okay, why Hulk Hogan?
I don't know. He just had a certain persona at that time. It was an era, of course. Shawn Michaels appealed to the younger crowd, I guess, in a way, because Hulk Hogan, of course, was getting older as time went on. But Hogan was like trying to be a little bit of a role model for some children to a degree, even though we all know about the steroids and everything else that everybody did. But that's another story. But I mean, you probably like Bret Hart because he's, what was it? The best there ever was, there is, what, that whole is, was, and whatever. But,
That was it. Is, was, and whatever. That was his catchphrase. There it is.
Was, is, and will be. But Shawn Michaels, I don't know. I just feel that, like I said, he appealed to the younger crowd. It was a different era. It's different eras. That's the whole thing. It's different eras. I mean, if you were to ask some other people, they might go back to a lot of older wrestlers. And like I said, Bruno Sammartino or Bob Backlund before he became psychotic. And, there was a lot of people will remember Rick Rude. This point in time, if I look back at it, I don't know. I might say maybe I might lean more towards Shawn Michaels.
Well, that was good. You did very well, I have to say. You actually got most of them right. So you did very well here. Anything else you'd like to say to everybody listening here before I let you go?
Well, I just want to say to all the mothers out there, everybody, be nice to your mothers because you see what they end up doing for you in the end. But no, I want to wish everybody a happy Mother's Day, happy and healthy, and hats off to all the mothers. And I have to add one thing. Whenever your children go into therapy, it's always the mother's fault.
She looked right in my face when she said that. What the hell
but
is that?
It's always the mothers get blamed for everything.
No, but thank you for doing it. She was a little nervous going into this. She had a little bit of stage fright. She was very modest about the whole thing.
He was making me laugh.
Well, I was trying to make her comfortable.
Comfortable? I got hysterical.
And I think everything, I told you everything would turn out well. See, I wouldn't lie to you. But no. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you,
too. You are the best.
Thank you very much.
Now get out of here. I have a show to do.
All right. Bye.
All right. Wait, no. Yeah, it's closed. That's fine. Let me tell you something. She did better on those questions than I thought she would. I'm actually very impressed. But now, thank you for indulging me. I really wanted to get her on the show. It's actually 2 years this month, almost 2 years to the day that we got the news that her cancer had come back. It was 2 years ago this month, and it just got me thinking. You know, I said it's Mother's Day. I want to get her on the show. Hopefully the first of many more times in the future and future Mother's Days. But I was just thinking, man, I would be really special to be able to get her to come on. And I'm really happy I did that. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Now it's time to get to your mailbag questions. It's time to hand the show over to you guys. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. Please include your name and where you are from. When you write in, that is all I ask. One quick note, there was a question a while back about whether or not the kickoff matches for WrestleMania count as matches on the WrestleMania card itself. Some of you say yes, some of you say no. And I made mention that on the WWE Network, if you go back in the on-demand library and bring up WrestleMania 33, the kickoff matches are not part of the broadcast. They are not part of the official broadcast. They are listed separately. Well, the WrestleMania 33 DVD and Blu-ray came out this week, and the kickoff matches where you had Neville and Austin Aries for the Cruiserweight title, you had Dean Ambrose defending the Intercontinental Championship, which is the top title now on Raw, it seems like, defending that against Baron Corbin, and you have the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, those matches are not included. That goes for the DVD and the Blu-ray versions. They are not on there. Now, apparently they are on the UK edition, which comes out next month. That's what I've read anyway, but not the version that was released here in the US. So to say, well, so-and-so's on the kickoff show, so what? It's all the same. I guess it's not. I guess it's not exactly all the same, especially if you're one of those guys looking to get on the DVD maybe and get some royalties out of it. You're up Schitt's Creek. All right, Finn from Durban, South Africa. Everybody is a big fan of Braun Strowman right now and has rightly praised him for becoming a star. But no one has given Roman Reigns the praise he deserves for turning Braun into a star. I'm not a Roman Reigns fan, but I admit that Roman has been integral to Braun becoming a big star. Roman deserves more praise and recognition from the fans for this. What do you think? I would be very careful to say that the reason Braun Strowman is a star is because of Roman. Roman Reigns did not make Braun Strowman a star. I do think Roman Reigns deserves credit because it's the matches that he and Braun have had. I think this feud has really helped Braun. And there are a lot of other top guys over the years, especially if you go back, some of the most beloved names in wrestling, who may not have been nearly as giving as Roman has been in this feud. Because Roman, you know, he's beaten around, thrown around like a rag doll. He's wrapped up like a mummy. I mean, he's done his part to make Braun out to be a monster. And yes, I do believe he deserves credit for that. But I wouldn't say that, you know, Roman Reigns has made Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman owes Roman Reigns his career. But I do think that you have to give Roman credit for being a part of the building of Braun Strowman into what is a legit star here on that Raw roster. Yeah, I do believe he does deserve some credit for that. Abbas from Iraq. Watching Drew McIntyre's match with Oney Lorcan on NXT reminded me of how good this guy really is. I also noticed there are a lot of similarities between him and Big Cass. Both of them are physically big, decent wrestlers around the same age. Drew is 31, Cass is 30. If given the ball to run with, who do you think would have the best future going forward? Well, they both have size. Cass is taller, but Drew McIntyre is a big dude himself. In the ring, though, like you were mentioning, they're both decent wrestlers. I don't know that decent is the word I would use for McIntyre. Cass can't touch McIntyre in the ring when it comes to matches. Drew is really good. Cass on promos, when he's piggybacking off of Enzo, is good. I think he could sound a little robotic at times in his delivery, but he's good. And I think he did all. I think he did well for himself even when Enzo was out hurt with the broken leg. And he had to go it alone there for a while and go out there on the microphone. And I actually thought Cass did very well. He made a good accounting for himself. So, you know, I think you compare the two in each of the categories, I do think that Drew is a better talker. I know Drew is a better wrestler. If I had to choose between the two of them, my money is on Drew McIntyre. I do think that Big Cass can be a star. And I think he'll be given every opportunity to be a star because of his size. I do think the split with Enzo is coming sooner or later. You know it's coming. But I do think that Drew is just the better overall performer. And there's more money. I think that there is more money in Drew McIntyre if they go all the way with that guy. Charlie from Missouri. I was talking to a few people on Twitter a couple of days ago who went to the Season 3 tapings of Lucha Underground. One guy told me they had to sign a non-disclosure agreement at the tapings. Essentially, this would be to avoid spoilers being released, although sites like Wikipedia already have the full Season 3 results. Either way, how do you feel about Lucha Underground making those who attended the tapings sign non-disclosure agreements? I have no problem with it. I mean, that's pretty standard stuff in TV. You know, having people sign NDAs, Lucha Underground. I think we sometimes lose sight of the fact that Lucha Underground at this point, this could change, but at this point, Lucha Underground is not a company. Lucha Underground is not a promotion. Lucha Underground is a television show. They don't tour. They don't do pay-per-view. I know they sent some guys to like the South by Southwest Festival or something, but they're not running house shows. They're not running their own live events. They don't do pay-per-views. I don't even know if they have their own official merchandise store. They don't have any of that. They're a TV show. And they have a relatively small audience in that building. I don't know how many people the temple fits. It can't be more than a few hundred. They take television months out. So it kind of makes sense. I don't have a problem with it. That's pretty standard stuff. David from Sacramento. How would you feel if Pete Dunne wins the UK title, causes chaos in NXT then to the point where William Regal has to come out of retirement to face him at a takeover show? This can play well from when they bumped heads during the UK tournament and could be Regal's final match before going into the Hall of Fame next year. I do think Regal is going into the Hall of Fame next year. There were rumors of him going in this year and then I guess he got bumped. Probably for the better. They already had too many people, so I do expect him to go in next year. I love the idea of a Regal Pete Dunne match. I love it, whether it's for the UK title or not, doing that match at a takeover show or maybe one of the UK shows on the network, I think is a fantastic idea, but it's not going to happen. Regal has said that after his last neck surgery, he's done. I think he had some kind of a fusion. I'm not sure. So physically, I'm not sure he can wrestle a match. I'm not sure he could even get cleared by WWE doctors. So in theory, yes, I would love to see that. I think that would be fantastic. If there was any possible way to make it happen, if I'm wrong and they could possibly find a way, then yeah, I'd love to see it. Dustin from Barberville, Kentucky. What is your opinion on the mass transit incident in ECW? And do you believe New Jack should have been prosecuted? Mass transit, my God. One of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. In or out of a wrestling ring. I'm sorry I ever even watched the video. And it's been years since I've seen it, but I still remember it. I remember the screams. You know, it was a fan cam video, never aired on TV or anything, thank God. ECW would have been thrown off the air so freaking fast if that aired on television. And there's no way they ever would have ended up on TNN all those years later. For those who have no idea what we're talking about here, there was an ECW show in the late 90s. Axel Rotten, I think, was it Axel or Ian? Axel. Axel Rotten was supposed to team with Devon Dudley against the Gangstas. He no-showed the event. I don't remember why, but Axel was a no-show. So they needed a replacement. Now, this father had brought with him his 17-year-old son. I guess they were wrestling fans, ECW fans. They must have been to some of the shows before. He brought his kid to the event. His kid was a big fan. He found out, I guess, that Axel was missing. And the kid told Paul Heyman, hey, look, I'm 22, I'm 23. I've been trained by, I think, Killer Kowalski. None of that stuff was true. He was not 22 years old. He was 17. He was not trained to be a pro wrestler. But this is what the kid told them, and so they put him on the show. And that he asked New Jack, of all people, this kid is going to replace Axelrod, and he's going to team with D-Von against the Gangstas. He goes up to New Jack backstage. He says, basically to New Jack, look, I've never done this before where I've had to cut myself. Would you cut me? Like, would you basically do the honors of cutting me because I don't want to cut myself or I don't know how to properly cut myself? He goes to New Jack, of all people, and asks New Jack to blade him. And they went out there for that match, and they brutalized this kid. They hit him with every weapon they could get their hands on. And when it came time for New Jack to cut the kid, he grabbed a scalpel, and he went to work. He cut this kid so deep, he cut right through the muscle, right down to the bone. This kid is screaming, and like blood-curdling screams from this kid. He's got blood literally squirting out of his head. There's a pool of blood on the floor. His father's outside the ring just screaming, ring the bell. The kid's only 17. He's only 17. Ring the bell. The whole thing was just horrifying. And now let me say this. The kid and his father, absolutely in the wrong. They lied to ECW. They lied to Paul Heyman about the kid's age. And so that's on them. He had no business being in that ring. And that's not a great example of parenting either. But that doesn't excuse what New Jack did to the kid. I mean, for God's sakes, this wasn't a blade job. It was attempted murder. Now, because the kid asked to cut him, he didn't go to jail. Because if I remember correctly, I think New Jack, I don't know if there was a criminal case or a lawsuit, whatever it was. I think New Jack was deposed. He had to give testimony. And I think it all came down to the fact that the kid asked New Jack to do it. And so I think he was acquitted. Nothing ever happened. But in my opinion, New Jack should never have been allowed inside a ring after what he did there. I mean, there's just no excuse for it. I mean, there's a difference between taking somebody who, you know, maybe you think he's acting like a dick, or he's got no, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? Like one of those kind of things. And then like hazing him or, you know, stiffing him or something like that. What he did here is just far beyond. I mean, it is far beyond anything that ever should have happened. So there's no right party in this situation. The kid was wrong. The father was wrong. New Jack was absolutely wrong. But I think it was just the level, like the graphic nature, like how far New Jack took this. There's no excuse for it. So yeah, I don't think he ever should have been allowed inside a ring after that. Colin from Cali. I met a girl on Tinder recently. Uh-oh. And she is not a fan of wrestling, but she said she would give it a shot. What are some matches, preferably in the modern time, that I should show her? It can be WWE, ROH, New Japan, WCPW, or anything like that. Okay. Colin, listen to me. Okay? Listen to what I'm saying to you. If you are on Tinder trying to meet women, I would not be using pro wrestling as a conversation starter. Now, if you see in her profile that she's a pro wrestling fan, she's a John Cena fan, a Roman Reigns fan, then go for it. There's your opening. Go for it. If she really wants to watch something, like, what's done is done. You've mentioned this. She's like, I'll give it a shot. If she really wants to watch something, show her a Roman Reigns match. She probably would like that. Show her any of those Roman Reigns, AJ Styles matches from last year. They had those two, the one at Payback. I think it was Payback and Extreme Rules. Those are really good. Show her those matches. Or show her the Bayley-Sasha Banks match from that first TakeOver show in Brooklyn. Show her that. As soon as I started reading the question, I'm like, uh-oh. I don't like where this is going. I don't know. Maybe, look, I don't have as much experience with that, with the Tinder stuff as other people might. It just seems to me that unless you're specifically looking for somebody who's a pro wrestling fan and you just admitted that she isn't, I would not be, you know, bringing that up right off the bat. That's something you kind of ease into. Like, I wouldn't start a conversation about it, but like when you go on the first date or the second date, then maybe you bring it up, right? If you're talking about mutual interests and stuff like that, or if she sees you're wearing like a wrestling shirt, although I wouldn't wear a wrestling shirt to a first date. Like, that to me makes more sense. So now you gotta let me know what happens. After she watches those matches, get back to me and let me know how it turns out. Piers from Boise, Idaho. I wanted to ask you a question in regards to The Undertaker's 23-2 win-loss record at WrestleMania. Is there anybody on that list who you would replace from Jimmy Snuka all the way to Roman Reigns? Who, if anyone, would you replace? I think that Undertaker and Mankind deserved a proper climax to their feud at a WrestleMania. I would have swapped out Sid for Mankind in 97, and I would have done that match at WrestleMania 13. I would have done the Sting match. Still can't believe we never did get that Sting match. I would have done the Sting match at WrestleMania 27, which was the big rumor at the time. Sting was available. There was a lapse in his TNA contract. And I think even he has said that he had talks with somebody. I don't know if it was Vince or whoever it would have been in WWE at that time. There was at least a phone call that happened. And that was when they had started running those vignettes on television. This was like after the Rumble of the shack in the woods with the rain. And the internet ran wild thinking that this was some sort of a vignette for Sting that was foreshadowing his debut. And that's, I mean, it was all the internet. That's what sparked the whole thing and the conversation with Sting and WWE. Sting kind of was like, yeah, you know what? I'm all for it. Let's see if we can make it happen. And I guess they couldn't. And so Sting ended up re-signing, I think, for another year with TNA. But to me, that would have been the year to do it. And they could have still did the match with Triple H the next year. You didn't need two Triple H matches. You still could have done the match with him and Triple H, end of an era, WrestleMania 28. That would have been fine. But that was the time to do it. I remember how freaked out everybody was at the beginning of 2011 that they might actually be doing Sting and The Undertaker. And again, they would have been a little bit younger than they, you know, than they were there at the end when Sting finally did come in and all that. So that would have been the time to do it. I would have done that at WrestleMania 27. And then John Cena. You know, again, I can't believe we never got Cena Undertaker at a WrestleMania. It's such a waste. But I would have done, instead of Bray Wyatt and John Cena at WrestleMania 30, which did Bray no favors. So it'd be a win-win if we could just kind of erase that match from the record books. I would have done Undertaker and John Cena at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans while the streak was still intact. Because that really was the best time to do that Cena match at WrestleMania while the Undertaker was still undefeated, not after. They could have done the match this year. They were going to, apparently. But it wouldn't have been nothing compared to if the streak were still intact. All the dramatic near falls, people just hoping and praying that John Cena wouldn't be the one to end the streak. It would have been great. A.A. Ron from Gainesville, Florida. I've been noticing of late that ODB has been parking her food truck at a lot of the NXT events. Do you know if this is possibly a hint that she could be part of WWE? Well, I interviewed ODB at WrestleCon for Fight TV. She was one of the interviews I did. She showed me her new barbecue sauce. If you remember during that interview, she was hawking the barbecue and she's been selling that. Not out of an RV. I forgot what she said it was. It wasn't an RV. It was some other kind of vehicle she's been traveling around. But she told me she was still working with Impact. So unless something has changed, no, she is not with WWE. She is not on her way to WWE, as far as I know. She seemed pretty upbeat about the Anthem relaunch. I guess she would kind of have to be. She was just on Impact not that long ago. So she may not technically be a full-time member of the roster, but as far as I know, she is still affiliated with Impact. And she's probably just being smart and going where the wrestling fans are, and she's selling her barbecue sauce. That's smart. Dylan from Toronto. Here is the scenario going into this round of Would You Rather. You and tag team partner Noah Mark are the local talent for a promotion when a big wrestling promotion comes to town. You are going to wrestle one of these three teams of your choosing in a squash match. To make matters worse, they catch you and Noah hitting on some girls before the show who turn out to be their girlfriends. So going into the squash, they are pissed off at you. Pick your poison and face either the Road Warriors, and you're the one taking the Doomsday Device, the APA and you're the one taking Bradshaw's clothesline from hell, or the Steiner brothers and you're the one taking the Frankensteiner? Which doomed fate do you choose? I choose none of the above. I would eat rat poison backstage before the match, before I would ever set foot in the ring with any of those three teams, if they were legit pissed at me. So either that, or if I had to, you know what? I'd pick the Road Warriors, and I would fake a heart attack so that Noah has to take the move for me. That's what I would. That would be the smart thing for me to do. But none of those scenarios is terribly tempting to me. Chris from Wappinger Falls, New York, buy or sell? Which one damaged WCW more, the finger poke of doom or the bash at the beach 2000 incident with Hogan and Russo? Buying on the finger poke of doom, selling on bash at the beach. By that point, you know, WCW was what? 8 months away, 9 months away, something like that from its doom. It was already on the way down. The ship was sinking. I think at that point, there really was no saving it. The finger poke of doom, you can't lay everything at the feet of the finger poke of doom. It was a lot of things. WCW, you know, a good expression to use for the death of WCW, it was death by a thousand cuts. That, I think, is a great way to explain the death of WCW. It was death by a thousand cuts. You can point to a thousand different things, big and small, that all contributed to the downfall of that company. The finger poke of doom might have been a bigger cut than most, but it was far from the only thing. But you can kind of pinpoint it back to around that time that Goldberg got beat for the first time, and the finger poke of doom happened. They promoted this big match on that episode of Nitro. It was in the Georgia Dome, right? 40,000 people. And for them to pull that nonsense at the end of that show, you know, but then, you know, Goldberg getting hurt didn't help, because I guess the plan was for Goldberg to try to rehab him. He was going to run through everybody again on his way, I guess, back to Hogan. But Goldberg put his fist through that limo window and severed his nerves, and he was out for months on end, and so they had to change plans. But the finger poke of doom was far more damaging, because WCW still could have been saved. There were still things they could have done at that point at the beginning of 99. By the time you get to July of 2000, it was over. I mean, you know, they may not have known. I think a lot of people there knew it. Some people may have been naive and didn't know it, but it was over. And lastly, Stefan from Germany. Buy or sell? Lex Luger defeating Yokozuna at SummerSlam 1993 and winning the WWF title, or Ryback defeating CM Punk at Hell in a Cell 2012 and becoming WWE champion? Who would have the greater career as champion? And on the flip side, whose career was hurt the most by not winning the title? I think that, I mean, in terms of who would have had the greater career as champion, I mean, it's hard to tell. I guess Luger. Luger was a bigger star than Ryback ever was. So putting the title on Luger, I mean, maybe he would have flopped and it just wouldn't have worked. There's no way of knowing. I can answer I could definitely answer the second part of your question. Whose career was hurt the most by not winning the title? Buy on Ryback. Absolutely. Buy on Ryback and sell on Luger. The thing about Luger was already a top star. He was a top star in the NWA for a number of years, right? WCW. He went to WWF instantly. Day one, the Narcissist. He was a big star. He only did the Narcissist thing for about 5 or 6 months. Hogan left. Vince said, I need a new Hogan. And so there he was, coming off the helicopter on the Intrepid, the big American hero. He became the number one guy in that company. And that's how he was positioned for many, many months thereafter, even though the fans were more into Bret Hart. It took them a while before they finally, you know, realized that and said, okay, we'll go with what the fans want, right? What a unique concept that is. And they positioned Bret Hart as the leader of the new generation, right? And Luger was sort of demoted in a way. But Luger was always a big star. And so him not winning the championship, yes, he could have been even bigger, but he was already a big star. And as soon as he went back to WCW on day one, when he showed up on that very first Nitro, he was a main eventer. He showed up in WCW and there he was with Hogan and Sting and Vader and Flair and all the top guys. And he remained a top guy for many years after that. So Luger did just fine for himself. Now, Ryback, on the other hand, did not have the benefit of already being established as a headliner anywhere else. He was a guy, a new guy, a young guy they were trying to push for the very first time. They kind of struck lightning in a bottle with him. He was doing the jobber thing for a while. He was beating two guys at once, three guys at once. He was starting to build some real momentum, and John Cena got hurt, and so they decided to put Ryback in his place in that Hell in a Cell match against CM Punk, which was a great opportunity for him, but it turned out to be the worst thing that could have happened because they were not going to take the championship off of Punk. They wanted it on Punk so that The Rock could beat him for it. So Ryback lost his very first match because part of the appeal of Ryback was, like, it was the Goldberg syndrome. He was undefeated. He was unbeaten. Nobody could stop him. Well, not only did he get stopped, he got stopped on a low blow from Brad Maddox, the great videographer over there, and he got pinned. And then he lost another pay-per-view match and another pay-per-view match, and Cena dumped him out of the Royal Rumble. And I think Ryback might have taken the losing fall then in the six-man tag at that Elimination Chamber show. I don't remember. Then Mark Henry fell on him at WrestleMania. I mean, we've been through this before. We all know the story of Ryback. Ryback never recovered from that. Again, hilarious to me that after all of that, then they turn him heel and then they put him in a championship feud against Cena. Like, after he's already been beaten and he's already been marginalized, hey, let's put this guy in a main event feud with John Cena. It's like, it's unbelievable to me. But Ryback never regained that same momentum. He was never as big as he was during that period. In a lot of ways, and I know this is kind of harsh to say, but you could say that Ryback, if we're looking at this and you're comparing Ryback to a guy like Luger, Luger never did reach the heights that people had for him in WWF, but Luger was a big name and a top star, and Ryback was and never was. I mean, that's just the way it is. It wasn't his fault. It was kind of like bad timing, bad booking, call it whatever you want. The circumstances just were not in his favor. The stars did not align for him. They didn't align for Luger, but Luger was just fine. Ryback, not so much. And again, calling him, you know, I never was, it probably is too harsh, and I'm thinking of this just in terms of, like, main event status. It might be more appropriate to look at Ryback and say what might have been. Maybe that's the more appropriate way to look at it, because I really do think that there was potential for him to not just get into the main event, but stay there and be, you know, a main event player if things had just gone a little bit differently for him, and it didn't. So maybe that's what his legacy will be in WWE. It'll be, you know, what might have been. What might have been had the circumstances been just a little bit different. Thank you to everybody for your continued support of the podcast. Please keep on supporting in any way that you can, even if it's just letting other people know about the show, just tuning in every single week, giving us a subscribe on YouTube, giving me a follow on Twitter at Solomonster, where I live tweet during some of the shows. We've got NXT TakeOver next weekend, which I'll cover on the podcast next Sunday. Of course, next Sunday is also Backlash, and I'll probably do a YouTube review for that as well. So there's a lot of good stuff coming up. You'll want to definitely be subscribed there for that. You can also check out the Sound of Gamer Retro Edition, the WrestleFest episode that I did. That was a lot of fun. I'm going to be doing more of those in the near future as well. And definitely take advantage of the Audible offer. I keep telling you guys, you can get one free book. Costs you nothing. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Get yourself a wrestling book, a non-wrestling book. It's your choice. Whatever you feel like listening to, just make sure you use our link to get it. That way you are supporting the show. You could buy a shirt in our store, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster. Sounds off. We had a flash sale, 20% off this week. You never know when another sale may pop up. But sale or not, definitely browse the store. You might find something there that you like. We will be back here with a brand new show next weekend. That'll be episode 496 here on our road to 500. Big milestone coming up next month. And until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you very much. Thank you again to Mama Monster for gracing us with her presence. That was a lot of fun. And we will see you right back here for more Sound Off next weekend. So until then, take care, guys. And also to all the moms out there, Happy Mother's Day.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemn Monster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
Since 2007, The Solemn Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemnmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off?